Throughout history, freethinkers have outraged the religious with their wacky ideas about the virtues of free speech, reason, and of course, eating babies. Now, God is dying, and it's time to dispose of his remains. From the pits of hell, Satan sends two puppets of the imperialist West and the Zionist Jews against God, Islam, and tiny kittens to bring you their propaganda and conspire for a new world order. This is Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment with Ali Rizvi and Armin Navabi.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment. My name is Ali Rizvi, and with me is the great Armin Navabi, and he's sitting there in a pink shirt. Armin, it's very woke of you. Very, I don't know, progressive. How's it going?
Sure. Good.
Okay, yeah, whatever. Yeah, hey, so, you know, we had a previous episode called Liberal versus Woke, where Armin played the devil's advocate, as he always does. He often does. And so, you know, it was kind of a fun conversation. A lot of confused some people who weren't onto it. And I had people messaging me. He's like, I'm horrified by the stuff Armin was saying. And I told him it was all role play. And then Armin and I do that quite
How many
frequently.
Times do we have to clarify that during the show? I don't understand how they got confused.
Yeah, but you said it right at the start. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but you said it right at the start that playing devil's advocate.
During the show, Ali was like, is this the real you or devil's advocate you? During the show, we clarified a couple of times as well.
To clarify even more things because then, you know, they said what I told them, listen, it was role play. We were just doing role play. We do that a lot, me and Armin. And then it got even more confusing because they're like, what? But anyway, so I'm not going to get into the details of that. But right now, today, we have my friend, Obaid Omar. He's here. He was one of our earliest guests. You know, we had an episode on free speech and he talked to us. He's an ex-Muslim. He's a war veteran. And
I'm not a war veteran. Please don't say that.
Oh,
no stolen valor. I was not military. Sorry. I have to clarify that. I was civilian contractor. Oh, okay. I was not military. No stolen valor here.
Well, for me, I mean, you were in Afghanistan, then you came back and you've been he's just a good friend. I disagree with him on occasion quite a bit, but he is one of the wittiest and he's got one of the smartest. Just on Twitter, he's just a pleasure to follow because it's amazing.
No, I'm not. I'm boring. Please don't follow me.
Oh, okay.
No. Too much pressure.
Okay, stop complimenting him. He's clearly uncomfortable when it comes to compliments.
Okay, but I must say one thing, Ali.
Okay, you're quite very good looking.
You were quite essentializing earlier. I mean, you were implying just because of the color of the shirt that it's woke. I mean, that's very essentializing. That was very woke of you.
Okay, I try to be as much as I can. As everybody knows, I'm the regressive leftist, woke sellout guy. But anyway. So what we had was that liberal versus woke episode, Armin, where you were playing devil's advocate. And then, you know, I heard that Obaid pretty much was, he said that, you know, we don't know anything about what we were talking about. He was disgusted and thoroughly repulsed by the conversation. Obaid, I'm just fucking with you. It's okay. He said that you guys have to understand the basis of this. I've been reading it for a while, and I saw some of the stuff that he talked about. I saw some of the shows you've been on. And, you know, you were right. You're actually quite articulate and pretty knowledgeable on this. So I thought it would be good to have you on and learn from you, even if we do disagree with you on occasion. And judging by some of the conversation that was happening before we went live on this, I feel like you guys can be doing most of the talking. Hopefully you can let me get a word in edgewise, but let's see.
We're gonna hold you accountable for some of the nonsense you've been spreading, Ali.
Okay, I'm not gonna hold anyone accountable for anything. You can hold people accountable. I don't give a rat's ass about accountability, right?
Oh my God. Maybe you should send us the rules that you have
You can do it. You can hold people accountable. I'm not here to hold people accountable. I'm here to talk about this.
I'm joking.
One.
Okay.
Yeah, I know you are. And so but whatever.
I just want to watch you guys go at each other.
I want to talk. Like I think we should.
Ali is dividing us, Obaid.
Okay. Whatever. Fine. Divide and conquer.
I'm like the British colonialist.
Okay. Okay. No, but I mean, okay. Divide and conquer is also how the woke works. So if you want to take that on right now, Ali. Okay. But like, I think we should talk about two separate things because, like I said, the way I heard you guys talk, I'm like, that's not really what woke is. And it's not like it's it is and it isn't, but like I think we should talk about the critical race theory stuff, the intersectionality stuff, what that is, and then how that influences the other stuff. Because
let's organize this for the audience. Right.
It's just, I think it's easier if we go through the critical race theory, like I'm just gonna like the critical social justice stuff. If you go through that, the scholarship, and then how it affects even other scholarship, like it affects history, it affects English, so, it affects
okay. We're gonna get into it, but let's start from the basics.
But just to be clear, I have gone through a lot of their writings, and I'm pretty sure I've got a lot of things right and a lot of things wrong. And I'm going to be checking with you because most of the time, the way I've been talking about the woke cult has been like bouncing off ideas with Ali. So I haven't actually had the chance to examine what I actually think. So I'm going to do that here with you, and you could tell me where you think I'm getting it wrong and where you think I'm getting it right.
Don't
base it on previous episodes, because I haven't done that in it.
Yeah, okay, guys, let's start for the audience, okay, who's not familiar with this stuff, because a lot of people aren't, okay? So, Obaid, can you start first with critical theory, and then after that, the critical theories that are based on it, and then the term woke and where it all came from. And let's begin with that, so we have a framework and a foundation to.
I want to give one small caveat. I don't consider myself an expert. I have been reading this stuff exclusively for about 18 months. And then I was reading papers and stuff a little bit before, and then I was watching videos and stuff. So I have a fair bit of understanding, I guess, but I don't want to put myself off as an expert. I have not read this exhaustively.
Yeah.
I don't know much. Okay. Critical theory in and of itself, I tried reading some of it. It is dense. It is insane. I'm not putting my mind through that torture.
Okay.
I understand the basics of it. Critical theory in and of itself comes from the Frankfurt School, comes from the 20s. It's neo-Marxist, but they changed the focus of Marx was the focus on capital and means of production. This was more like, and especially by the time it got through, like I'm going through this very quickly because when you get to about the 60s or stuff, it's talking about cultural things. Yeah. It's talking about the critical approach was to look at something and take away the hidden, like the hidden biases, the hidden discourses, the critical meaning, the critical method was not like critical thinking, in science where is H2O make water? Let's try it. Does it make whiskey? It's not that. It's finding problems in everything. And that was a critical method, but it was also discourse has power. There's power in language. And then that comes into postmodernism where you get discourse is, it's more Foucault where discourse creates reality. Okay. There is an objective reality. Even if you're not looking, the mood is actually there.
Okay.
Right? I'll take an example out of, James Lindsay's and Helen Pluckrose's book, Critical Theories, where they will take like the earth going around the sun, right? Yes, objectively, you can show it with science, but that is a way of knowing that was produced by white Western people. If there is another way of knowing that says the sun goes around the earth, even though that there is an objective truth, it doesn't matter because we don't share objective truth. Whereas science will say, or the Enlightenment values, like you, where you have debate and discourse, you can come to a reasonable objective truth that we can all agree upon. You know, whereas
so what they do is they prioritize a storytelling, lived experience, personal narratives, often over reason, which they look at reason and science as a hierarchical oppressive system.
Okay.
Ali's jumping in. Can I jump in as well?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure.
So it seems to me, based on what I've read, is that they do what they are interested in more than the truth, more than objective reality, is who has the authority to set the narrative, who has the authority to say what is true, and that is more important than what is actually true. Is that a fair categorization?
Okay, that's, again, from a postmodernism thing, and it's not who has the authority. Discourses create authority, and if there's a dominant discourse, that gives power to people. It's not that people take power. It's not that people in power create the discourse. it's if you have a dominant discourse, that discourse takes the whole thing. Was it's not that science is hierarchical, everything is hierarchical, everything was a meta narrative. Marxism was a meta narrative, the religion is a meta narrative, science is a meta narrative, everything was a meta narrative. So, but they said that this was a favored way of knowing because it empowered white Western Europeans to conquer the world. And it was because they conquered the world, they put their discourse on everyone. And so, yes, you have to look at ethnographies. It's in critical race theory. There's a book called Acting White. And Acting White is okay. There's the whole prologue is about how Obama acted white and you shouldn't act that way. And I don't want to, I'm getting too far afield.
I think we're jumping a little bit all over the place.
Yeah, I'm going too far, but like what I'm saying, the problematizing is from postmodernism, but postmodernism was completely deconstructive. It didn't want any meta narratives. Everyone has their own narrative.
Right.
What Kimberly Crenshaw did, what Judith Butler did, what, Peggy McIntosh did. They took that postmodern ideal because it also broke down race as a social construct, which technically, if you go back and look how Europeans got race, it was right. And so, but postmodernism wanted to deconstruct everything. They said, no, we have to build an identity around race. You deconstruct the narrative. But the identity.
Okay, guys, I think we need to give a little bit of a structure to this conversation because I think because I don't think people understand what are we might be even talking about. What if we talk a little bit about the history of this idea, and then go into how it's similar to religion in many aspects, and then we could then talk about how what the effects of it are today. So we could separate these discussions. Okay.
Right. Yeah, and I want to say that I think that all of us, we're going to agree with the problems of this idea. I mean, we all have, like, that's, I mean, yeah. We all come
we're going to disagree on how widespread it is, which yeah, we're going to talk about at the end. Okay. So let's say four sections. History of it, right? How is it like religion? What does it look like today? And at the end, how widespread it is. Four sections. Okay. Is that good?
That's fine. But the history of it, like, we shouldn't focus too much on postmodernism and critical theory. If you're going to figure out postmodernism a little bit more, but all it was to break down discourses. Postmodernism was meant to break everything down.
Right.
There was no meta narratives. These people built a meta narrative using, they turned postmodernism, they applied postmodernism. So like, you know, you have mathematics and you have applied, you have like theoretical physics and then you apply it through engineering. Right. So they turned identity into a way to apply it. So critical race theory started out of critical legal scholarship. And that basically the father of it was Derrick Bell. He was a tenured professor of law at Harvard Law School. And he wrote a book in 1970. His paper in 1976 was Serving Two Masters. The book in 1970, he came up with this idea of interest convergence, which was white people only do something, like they only gave civil rights because that helped them further white supremacy. They only do stuff for themselves.
Right.
Okay. And he talks about it in Serving Two Masters. He wrote another paper called Brown versus the Board of Education and the interest convergence dilemma. Now, then you have people like Peggy McIntosh who were black feminists, who were talking about intersectionality. She wrote a paper about white privilege. Then you have Kimberly Crenshaw, who was a student of Bell's. Her two principal papers for intersectionality, one was in 1989, and then the one in 1991, Mapping the Margins, she tied it to postmodernism and to critical race theory. And I mean, she brings up some good points. Like there was a case, I believe it was a GM, could have been Ford, but whatever. It was, they had black men working in the warehouse. They had white women working in the office. They had no black women. So they found a way to be racist and sexist. Right? And this comes out of law. And like she brings up some good points. Even Derrick Bell in his paper, Serving Two Masters, he brings up the point about the desegregation. And he said, schools shouldn't have been desegregated. Education should have, which is a good point. It makes sense. Instead of bussing people 2 hours each way, fix the schools, right? It would have been a much better solution. But he takes it one step further and said there should be no desegregation whatsoever. You know, like goes on to like how they're destroying culture, this and that, and everything. It's so these people like, and that's where this stuff starts from,
right?
And
can I give you a little really quick snapshot of how I've see the history, and then you could tell me where I'm wrong, or maybe
okay.
You know.
Okay.
So really quickly, right?
Sure.
So after you know the defeat of Marxism in many places. Left a vacuum for a lot of the people that wanted a revolution that completely restructures society in a way that removes hierarchy, brings people who are in power, the oppressors, brings them down and creates like an equal opportunity society for everybody and all of that. So with so basically in this vacuum, there was the people that were providing an alternative way of starting a revolution or promoting a revolution became popular. So it's kind of like, so that's why some people see it, I don't know, accurately or not so accurately, as this whole critical race theories to be a rebranding of Marxism. And what was changed in it is that the people who are in power to take that from them, instead of controlling the means of production, what Marx didn't get right was Marx was too class reductionist. So what you're supposed to do, it's not that they are in power just because they control the means of production. They're in power because they control the means of production and culture and what narratives are accepted and what stories right. we see and what media is promoting. And it's easier to get culture from them before we get the means of production from them. And critical theories was waging war against that, right? So that instead of like saying who are the lower class and wage war against the people that are upper class, you see like who's oppressed based on identity and wage war against people who are in power because of their identity. That would be a rebranding of the revolution. And this, but let me finish it and then you could tell me where I'm wrong. Then what they liked, so postmodernism was a separate thing. Postmodernism was like a nuclear bomb that will just destroy, like was saying, like wanted to deconstruct everything in its path. Like nothing, everything could be true, everything. Like so, but they looked at that and what they liked it a little bit, these critical theories people, I don't know what you want to call them, or you said critical social justice people or whatever. They looked at postmodernism. They said like, oh, we like the destructive nature of this because we could blow things up with it, but we want to use it selectively. We want to use it on everything that the white man has built, but we don't want to destroy our identity. We don't want to destroy what it means to be black. We don't want to destroy what it means to be oppressed. We don't want to destroy what it means to be a woman. We want to be able to use the destructive source of postmodernism on things that, on the Enlightenment values, on civil rights, on science, on everything that we think has anything to do with white culture and the tools of the master. And that's how they got like a semi-marriage, but not a complete marriage, but semi-marriage that happened over there. What part of this is right and what part of it is
wrong? That's my understanding of it too.
Okay, exactly. There is some, like, okay, from what I've read, and I'm not an expert, honestly, I think you should speak with James Lindsay and Helen Parkrose about this specifics area. They would be able to like break it down far better than I could. But the Marxist thing, okay, when this stuff started coming out was in the 70s. Marxism wasn't dead. Soviet Union was still going strong. You know, let's not forget that.
It was unpopular.
It was unpopular in the West, but it doesn't mean that it was dead. Okay, it was popular around the world.
Wait, hold on. Can I just quickly? So it wasn't that Marxism was dead or not. Yes, communism was alive, right? But the prediction of Marx, the famous prediction he had, that ultimately, you know, that capitalism gone unchecked will keep the proletariat overthrowing the bourgeoisie and everything. That part of it, that prediction did not come true. Communism became very authoritarian. The success of capitalism was visible for everybody to see. So It may not have been. I mean, Marxism still isn't dead. There's a lot of...
But I'm saying in the 70s, there was... After the fall of communism, Marxism took a real hit. And if you look at Nick Cohen's book, What's Left, that shows where that vacuum came in more. And that vacuum has something to do with this, but that's more of a post-colonial thing.
But it was discredited before. Actually, the discrediting of Marxism was actually one of the reasons that early critical theorists, like the Frankfurt School, did have some differences from Marxism.
Yeah, because they weren't completely
Marxist.
And they had the whole idea of the long march through the institutions, right? Which this takes part of. Okay, that's straight out of critical theory. It's like go through the institutions, own the culture. Okay, I don't disagree with that. But okay, when you talk about the master's tools, Audre Lorde's paper in 1978, for the master's tools will not destroy the master's house, and that was an attack on capitalism. And furthermore, that property is whiteness
and science.
Okay. She was initially writing about capitalism, but then they took it to mean a whole bunch of other things. Anything that is white is part of that whole thing. That's why property is violence. Property is whiteness. Okay. So that there was a materialistic side to critical race theory and to the black feminist movement that when Crenshaw came in, like I said, you were right. She took the identity. They wanted to break down the social construction because identity is a social construction. They're even saying that was given to them by white people, but they're holding on to a black identity, and identity matters. And the intersectional framework was what really codified this stuff more than anything else. That because everything took on that intersectional framework, like queer theory and fat studies and disability studies, they have a queer theory version of intersectionality, but as of about 2010, everything took on that intersectionality thing. So critical race theory was the first one of these things to come out. Then there was queer theory. Then there was intersectionality. Now intersectionality, I mean, in the paper, Mapping the Margins, which is basically one of the foundational pieces of intersectionality. I mean, she says it straight out, the liberal ethic of looking at people individually and taking the social significance out of race was bad, that you needed a black, a gay, these intersectional identities, and you needed an identity politics for the marginalized people. And they all of them specifically say the Enlightenment is bad. It's wrong. And it is a white way of knowing. And again, that part of that comes from post-colonial theory, which is directly off of postmodernism. And it wasn't really related to this stuff until about the 2000s when they started merging all this stuff together and creating a whole field of studies on all these things. And it's post-colonialism mixed with critical race theory. It's got the intersectional framework in it. Again, it's built off postmodernism where it's deconstruct everything. Okay. And so when they say decolonize, I mean, post-colonialism came out after the colonial era. It came out in the 80s. So there's still the effects of colonial, I think the last colonies in Africa were in the late 70s. It depends on how you look at South Africa, but it came after that. So colonialism was over, but then it went to look at decolonize everything, right? So there's a 2000 paper, I think we talked about it last time it was on, is called A Virtuous Cut. It's talking about the virtues of FGM. And it's a post-colonial paper. You're putting white Western values, because they don't consider anything, there is no universal value. There's only values per identity. So you're putting white Western ways of knowing on these people to when you say it's bad. So you're colonizing them all over again.
Yeah, so, it's relativism.
That's where that comes from. But like I said, these things started melding together in the 2000s. Okay, so I saw someone put up problematizing a couple of times. Yeah, problematizing comes out of, in queer theory, they say queering everything. Problematizing is the critical approach. You find problems in everything, and it's literally problems in everything. This is an example James Lindsay uses a lot, and it works out perfectly, but I can give you a couple others that are similar to this. If you own a shop, and there's two people walk in, they both as equally well-dressed, they both look professional, they both look whatever, or both look equally shabby. You take your pick. One's black, one's white. If you walk up to the black person first, that's racism because you want the black person out of your store and you're rushing them out. If you go to the white person first, that's racism because you're ignoring the black person. You're not serving them because they're not as important because you think they might spend less money. No matter what you do, it's racism. If you wait for the black person, if you wait, you say, I'm just going to stand there, wait for them to come up. If the white person goes up first, that's racism because the white person feels because they're white, they're superior to the black person. They should get served first. If the black person goes up first, that's racism as well because they're afraid of what the white person, they want to get out of the store as fast as possible. They want to don't want to be accused of theft. Okay. Like this is how this shit works.
Okay.
Okay. That like everything is problematized. It's okay. It's jihad. It's racial. It's jihad. Like if I could explain it like that, you look at everything you've done all day long and how was I racist? If you're walking down the street, okay, and if there's a black person and a white person walking on a sidewalk and they're going back and forth, like they're going in opposite directions and they cross and they both smile and nod at each other, there is racism in that situation. The racism in that situation is the black person knows inherently that they're inferior and they have to smile and nod to get the approval of the white person. And the white person is smiling and nodding because that's the approval that they're supposed to get. And this is all acknowledged in the space of that half a second when they're crossing each other. And like I said, it is a racial, it's jihad, or if you want to go into Scientology, it's fucking critical race auditing. So you're looking for critical race thetans in your system. Like every fucking thing is racist. Everything.
Yeah, that. But
I mean,
go, Armin.
Just to be clear, this is not something that we are saying. Like, this is not an accusation. This is literally what they say. Like, it's not like we're like looking at them and saying this is the interpretation of what they're saying. No, actually, if you read their books, they say it in black and white without needing to. You don't have to read in between the lines. They actually say it's not. How it's not if racism is happening in every single situation. The question is how racism is happening in every single situation. Yeah. That's the question you have to be asking. Yeah. Like if you ask, is there racism here? If you ask that question, that's proof that you're being racist. Because of course it doesn't matter what you're asking about. Of course there's racism happening here. The question is, how is it happening? Not if, right? This is not like us like making fun of them. This is them describing what they think.
Yeah, this is not a straw man.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think that it's that part of it is especially problematic because when you do have situations when there is actual racism happening and there is actual oppression happening. And when it is happening, especially systemically, and you want to fight that, then all of these people, they'll just come up and they'll talk about, well, you know, it's everywhere, it's here, 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 and it dilutes the focus from the real situations that actually need attention. So okay. That's one of the most important things about it.
They think discourse. Okay, honestly, it's like magic spells. They think like they literally believe in magic spells. Like discourse shapes reality. Discourse marginalizes people. So okay, this comes from critical theory. This is a thing from Herbert Marcuse. It's called repressive tolerance. So it's not just enough to give a marginalized person their voice. You have to censor anything that might cause them harm. Mm-hmm. Greg Lukianov actually did a really good thread on this. He was talking about the culture of free speech versus law, like free speech law versus free speech culture. And he talked about how this idea of repressive tolerance has come through in the academy in a lot of different subjects since the mid 80s. So when we go to talking about how far widespread this kind of this stuff is, and again, critical theory is not critical race theory, but it plays off of it. But that this idea of repressive tolerance is in there. That you have to save the marginalized person from the harm that could be done by hearing something. And it's okay. I'll give you an example of something. And this is very, very silly. So you guys know Courtney Heard, right? Godless Mom.
Yeah. I actually love her. So don't say anything bad about her.
No, I'm not saying anything bad about her. Courtney's great. She's awesome.
I'm just kidding. You can say anything you want, but I love her.
Okay. Yeah. We joke, like her and I joke around on Twitter every now and then. And a couple of days ago or a couple of weeks ago, she put up something silly that said, yo, am I being brainwashed for wearing a bra or something like that? And I just said, no, you're being selfish. Now, it's a joke. Yes, it's a little sexist. Yes, it's okay. Now, if they're looking at a critical approach, I'm being sexist and misogynistic. Her laughing at it is her internalizing that. Like, if this was on a university campus and someone overheard it, and it's one of the campuses, and there's a lot of them that have, if you hear something that's offensive, blah, 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 go to the diversity office, right? So basically getting students to like rat each other out for innocent shit like that. So it is teaching kids, and then I shouldn't even say kids, like, and now it is kids, now it's K through 12. In a lot of places, this is in curriculum K through 12. Again, we can get to that later. But okay, going back on the history of this stuff. Sorry, I'm jumping around here too much.
I want to say one thing about just interrupting really quickly about the university campuses that, you know, I think that this is probably true for a lot of some of the social sciences and some of the humanities. But I think bra wearing or not wearing is just not generally a problem, a controversial thing on college campuses. And universities. Just
okay, checking. No, I'm not saying it is.
I'm making like a frat party joke, but either way, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, but I'm not saying it is, but it's gotten, they are
I know urging, what you're saying,
they're yeah. urging students to report this kind of shit, and they mean little crap like that. Like, mm-hmm. Like I said, it's a very stupid thing. Like, oh, I wasn't being, okay, yes, maybe I was being a little sexist, I don't know, but like, I'm joking around with someone I'm friendly with, and like, oh, someone I've spoken with, and like, you know, this and that. It's not like, you know, I wasn't being a total rude, pervy dick, right? Like, but someone might read it that way. But so, like, the intersectional framework being put on this stuff tied it all together. So then that started in like 91. And then then this stuff kind of became a field. So you had like, it went from feminist studies to gender studies. Then you had like the queer theory as well, but that was starting in the 80s. But then like, instead of having like African-American studies or race studies, it went to critical race studies, and it was through an, you know, intersectional framework. And that stuff then morphed, you know, cause it built on itself. You had more and more books being written, more and more papers being written, more and more of this stuff coming out. On or about around, let's say it was somewhere between 2008 and 2012, somewhere in that range, like James Lindsay and Helen Pluckrose say 2010, but somewhere in that range. Cause again, when we talk about like how far this has spread, you can see certain trends coming up around that time. All of this stuff became codified into one thing. So post-colonialism comes in with critical race theory. So you have to break down white Western ways of knowing. So science is a white Western way of knowing. I mean, okay, University of Johannesburg, I don't know how much credence you want to give that, but it was a 2-hour-long conference in 2016 called Science Must Fall. Then 2017, 2018, they had two other, you know, conferences like for a couple hours, a few hours each day on decolonizing science. Now, the Science Must Fall conference, it was the arts department, mainly philosophy department, and there was it was the science department. And the arts department, like, I'll send you the video that they're saying it, that we don't need white Western science. It's a white Western way of knowing thing. It's being imposed on us. It's colonizing again. We have shaman that can call lightning down on people. And when someone from the science department snickered, they were scolded and made to apologize. Okay. This stuff, it is infecting science here. There's queer engineering. There's like... I'll read us just a small quote. Like, let me have it here. It just fucking scared the fuck out of me. Where is it? Sorry if I can find it.
After this, I want to, once you read the quote, I want to go, I have six similarities that I have with everything you said with religion. I can do three at a time, because if I go for if I mention all six of them,
okay.
I think it would be okay. In the
book Engineering and Social Justice, blah blah blah. Okay. Getting beyond the views of truth as an objective and absolute is the most fundamental change we need in engineering. So getting beyond the views of truth and objectivity in engineering. That's the most important change you need to have in engineering. Like, honestly? Like, I don't want a bridge built on people who don't believe in objectivity. Thank you very much. Like, I don't want to get on that space shuttle. If you want to talk about the similarities between religion, there's a lot.
Yeah.
And there's very specific
examples. I want to focus on six.
Yeah, go ahead.
The first one is the most interesting one. By the way, I just want to say I have started to have a guilty... I actually like it a little bit now, this whole woke cult, because the more I study it, the more I see that it's like a very detailed mythology, and like it has its own Genesis story, it has its own end of time story, and redemption, narrative, and it just makes, even though it's ridiculous, if anybody actually believes in it, just like I have some love-hate relationship with Christianity and Islam, like I like them as mythologies, I hate them as a guide to life. This whole woke thing, now going through its history and the details on how they have managed to build this whole ideology, I have started to appreciate all the, the internal consistency within the world that they have built, right?
Before you go on, I just want to say one thing. When you said internal consistency, okay, do you remember that episode of The Simpsons where there's a hurricane or something, and the only house that burns down gets blown away is Flanders? Flanders goes out to the woods, and he says, "God, why'd you destroy my house only? I've done everything in the Bible, even the stuff that contradicts the other stuff." There is no internal consistency in this.
No, the apparent internal. No, okay, so. For example, if you read Harry Potter, you could find contradictions in some of the stuff as well, right? But still, for a made up world, it's pretty impressive. Do you know what I mean? The only world that you could have that there's no contradiction in it is the real world. But for fantasy world,
what, there's no contradictions in the real world.
No, like in objective reality.
Okay, yeah.
No, I'm not talking about people's perception of the real world. I'm talking about objective reality. That's the only where you don't have actual contradictions.
Talking about the situation that we're all living in right now.
Yeah, I'm talking about when you build a fantasy world, of course you're going to find contradictions, but it's still pretty impressive if you could, if you could build a Star Wars world or a Harry Potter world or an Islamic world or a Christian ideology world. I'm just saying, for a new religion that the like semi-religion that the woke cult is, it's pretty interesting. I think like if it was being treated as mythology, I'm impressed, right? But so here's some of the interesting things about it. When it comes to the original sin, this is the first similarity you find. This is most closer to Christianity, right? So we all saw this first similarity, that the sins of the father being the sins of the son in the woke ideology is very similar to Christianity, and I think most people notice that right at the beginning. But what is actually more interesting is that this original sin is actually almost the same sin, because the original sin in wokeism is knowledge, in the way that they think that the Enlightenment thinkers and the philosophers and the science and scientific revolution, what it did, it gave the white man the tools to be able to colonize the world and to oppress everybody else, right? So what they call knowledge and what they call science was the sin, where all of this came from, right? Giving them the upper hand over everyone else, right? And they ever since then they became like gods, and they were the ones who were setting the rules. But it's very interesting, because the original sin in Christianity was also the fruit that from the fruit of knowledge, and which was eating that fruit made them think that they can become like gods, right? So that's one similarity. Another, which is not just that there is a concept of original sin, which you could be guilty of even though your ancestor did it, but the nature of that original sin is also the same thing. The second one is the whole idea of when you mentioned that you find racism everywhere, because you're trying to find a disease everywhere that you have the solution to. And this is very much similar to, sin being an imaginary disease invented for them, for religious people to be able to sell an imaginary cure. And the more places where you could, the more you could say that how widespread, and how, like in Christianity, you also always mention that sin, you know, we're all sinners, which just sounds like a lot to like, we're all racist, right? And what do you do when everybody's a sinner? Well, you need the church, or you need the mosque, or you need the imams or the priests to come in and cleanse everything. And what you do when you need, when everybody's a racist, then you hire the, you know, you have to fund the equity office or the diversity trainers, and you know, keep funding these programs. So in that aspect is very relevant. The third one, I know I have six, I'm just going to stop at three for now. The third one is that just like my in religion, how you have
Armin, do all six. Do the whole.
No, it's good. I don't want to. I'm going to get tired of hearing my own voice.
No, it's interesting. Let's keep the whole thing because it's more coherent.
Okay, I'm going to try to do it faster. The third one is the religion, especially Islam and Christianity. On the surface, they look like a pretty box, right? I mentioned like the poison pill of Islam. They're surrounded with these ideas that if you don't dig deep into it, it might come as nice and fluffy and, you know, cute. Like, oh, we have to be nice to orphans, take care of the poor. But once you open the box, you see there's a whole bunch of crap inside it, right? That is absolutely dangerous, right? So that whole idea of a lot of dangerous ideas being put in a pretty box, they have managed to do that as well, because the pretty box is like what? Like, oh, help minority people, be pro-woman, be support gays, anti-discrimination. That's the pretty box that they have if you don't actually open the box and see what's actually inside. So in that sense, it's also like the PR that the Christianity and Islam does, right? So really quickly, going over the similarities to Islam is that it's all-encompassing. In this thing, it's not like Christianity where you just have belief in Lord Jesus as your Lord and Savior. You go to church once a week, you're done. No, that's not good enough. Just like Islam, where everything you do and everything you think and everything, everything you say you have to be questioning: is this Islamic or not? Is your house Islamic? Is your music Islamic? Are the books that you're? Are you doing everything? Are you wiping your ass in according to Islamic laws? Right? Is your office designed in a way that is according with Islamic laws? Is the economic policies in accordance with Islamic laws? Is the school policies in according with Islamic laws? It's a religion, not for your just believing. It's not just a faith. It's a religion that means to have a rule for every part of your life. In the same way, this woke cult is trying to take over every part of everyone's lives as well. The government is trying to fix the holes in the road. Is this new policy racist against anyone? You have a bookshelf. How many of the authors are white? How many of them are not white? How anti-racist is your bookshelf? Everything you do, you have to ask your question. Is this the most anti-racist way for me to do it, right? So they're trying to go everywhere, right? And control everything. They control schools, government, private and public institutions, books, museums, and everything has to be cleansed. And they use that as a way to take over and control every narrative. The fifth one is the fact that you have a core, like you have, just like in a religion, you have the imams and the fundamentalists, the people that are so-called Islamic scholars, and they know the literature and they know the text, and they have read the founding documents. And if you ask them about the hadith and the Quran and the tafsir, they know all of that. But then you have the whole bigger circle of nominal Muslims who are affected by this center. But they really have never read the Quran, have never read the Hadith. They consider themselves as part of the Islam, but you know, if they are not very familiar with it, they're just part of it. And actually, it's in the best interest of the people of the core for a lot of these people to accept themselves as Muslims without actually reading the original text, because the original text would be problematic to the values that a lot of them actually hold. A lot of the Muslims would not be able. So in the same way, the woke cult, if the critical theories, the essence of it is actually a lot in contradiction to maybe a lot of the values that the wider circle of the people who are being influenced by it hold, but a lot of people consider themselves as part of this without ever having read the original text, and sometimes even if they're confronted about what the critical theories stand for, or if they understood where the narratives that they're repeating come from, they might actually, if they were confronted about that, they actually would say, no, actually, these are not the values I would be standing for. Just like a moderate Muslim might say, oh, Islam is actually the most feminist religion, or Islam is completely supportive of gay rights. Well, it doesn't. So you could see a lot of people that might consider themselves woke, but they don't understand what ideas they're actually promoting. And last one that I have here is that just like religion, just like Christianity and Islam, especially woke, the main enemy of the woke cult is Enlightenment values and liberalism. And it's very interesting because they do something that seems completely ironic, because they want to destroy everything that liberalism and Enlightenment values has achieved and for the world, but at the same time take credit for everything that has achieved, and from, you know, at the same time. So you see that, oh, I don't know why people, okay, hold on. You see that in Islam, like Christianity said, like, oh, the Western countries are great because of Judeo-Christian values. And at the same time, Christianity is in direct opposition to Enlightenment values. So everything that made the Christian countries, Western countries great has nothing to do with Christianity, but the Christians want to take credit for it anyways. Muslims also say that when they try to keep talking about the golden age of so-called Islam, but it's the golden age of Arabs and Persians, I always say. And also many Muslims that say, like, oh, Islam is actually the first feminist religion, blah, 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 all the crap like that. But while at the same time, we know that the core ideology is against Enlightenment values, and they are completely... But the only difference is, so this woke cult, a lot of these people try to piggyback on the Enlightenment movement, on the civil rights movement, on the Enlightenment, on the results of the Enlightenment of liberalism. But they themselves admit in the core text that their main enemy is not fascism. You know, it's actually the liberalism. Liberalism is their number one enemy, and they want to destroy it. But yet most people who are loosely associated with it without actually reading the founding text, they think that they are actually in line with what the civil rights movements try to achieve. So in that way, but the only difference is that actually I think, and I think this is something me and Ali will fundamentally disagree on, I think from all the things that are right now attacking Enlightenment values, Islam, Christianity, the far right also is against Enlightenment values, in the past couple of weeks, I have been convinced now that the main threat to Enlightenment values is this cult, because it has managed to, you know, it's like the wolf that looks like a sheep, like it's actually within the Enlightenment centers, right? Like all the other attacks at Enlightenment values is coming from outside, but... when it comes to the woke cult, it's like, yeah, the enemy has breached the gate, it's in the house, and it's actually infecting Enlightenment values from within. So I consider this woke cult to be the greatest threat against Enlightenment values today.
But okay, So some of your religious things, I agree.
But I'll go on.
No, just give me a second. Like, go ahead, Ali, because like I said, some of the
things... No, you go.
Okay. I don't see it. Like, I don't have like six different points. Where I could, what you're talking about, like the Genesis story, right? The creation myth. Yes and no, but you have to be I'm going to be very pedantic here. Sorry. In the Abrahamic myths, it's the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. It's not just knowledge in general. It's a very specific knowledge. Now, with like critical social justice, right? They are talking about. The Enlightenment is at the same time, it's the serpent, it's the fruit, and it's Eve. It's all at the same time. Okay. It is that way of knowing, which, yes, like you said, that way of knowing let white people be supreme. It'll help them colonize. It brought them science. It brought them advancements. It gave them power, over, like technological advancements over everyone else. That no one else had, and there's a huge advantage. Plus, let's not forget that, you know, England sitting on a pile of iron. There's a bunch of iron stuff in Europe. Like, you know, like they had the tools and they could exploit this stuff. So it's whereas religion is only looking at the ethical thing, like the Abrahamic faiths, it's not the knowledge of science, because God says, I've done all this for you. I'm the science, right? Like, quote unquote, like if you just look at the religious thing, you don't look for why. It's God did it. It's the knowledge of good and evil. This thing is the way of knowing of the Enlightenment came in. And again, this Ibram Kendi, I'm trying to think of who else. I think D'Angelo says it. I think Crenshaw says it. You know, and I think Derek Bell says it. Like, white people have been oppressing black people, you know, since the dawn of time. Time started when the white way of knowing pushed itself on all other ways of knowing. Now, when you're talking about how Islam, it took, so like, you know, like that's the original sin that comes in. Like that is the thing that brings the original sin in. So if you're looking at critical race theory, whiteness or racism is the original sin. If you're looking at feminism, intersectional feminism, it's patriarchy or misogyny. If you're looking at queer theory, it's transphobia or homophobia, or, you know, even though queer theory is quite homophobic. But if you know the idea of Calvinist idea of total depravity, or if you look at like the Westboro Baptist Church, you've talked about them, some other Baptist things, the idea of total depravity is that the entire society is consumed by sin. Everything is drenched in sin. Now, Calvinists also have this idea, instead of the Westboro Baptist Church, Jehovah's Witnesses have it, that there's only a certain number of elect that will make it to heaven. No one knows who those elect are. Either you are elect or you're not. But it's best to act as if you're elect, because if you are one of the elect and you don't act in that thing, because you will know them by their faith and you will know them by their acts. If you don't act like the elect, you're going to go to hell anyways. So, but even if you aren't elect, if you act as if you're one of the elect, you might, through faith and some acts, find some salvation to a lower level of heaven. Okay. So it acts like total depravity. Like, you'll hear the thing, I will not be consumed by whiteness, or they were consumed by whiteness, or, you know, Asians are now white, so yellow is the new white. Fuck. Like it's horrible. Like, I don't know. Okay, there was a meeting in Toronto like a month ago or a month and a half ago, brown complicity and white supremacy and brown fragility. And again, it plays off the idea of interest convergence. So this is like, so it acts more like total depravity. Yes, I get what you're saying with Islam. It's like, okay, you know, Islamic finance, you know, fucking walk with the left foot into the washroom, not the right one. Like, yeah, it consumes everything, right? Yes. But that's, so if you look at it more like total depravity, that's a better fit for it, I think. Like I said, it, like the Islamic thing, yes, like it's jihad, I think works perfectly for that. You know, was I racist? But there's also a societal it's jihad. Like, you have to look at society. How, where is all this hidden biases? And it's not like that you're finding racism everywhere. Racism is everywhere, all the time. That's the total depravity. It's hidden under biases, using the critical method to problematize stuff, or in queer theory to queer things, is to pull back those biases and take away that veil of ignorance, even though they're not using it the same way John Rawls does. That is what the critical approach is. That is what breaking. And so when they say they want to break down the system of white supremacy, right, they're not talking about fucking asshats in Charlottesville, right? They're not talking about that. They are literally talking about white ways of knowing. So again, going back to the master's tools will not dismantle a master's house, Angela Davis wrote some stuff on that. Angela Harris wrote some stuff on that. They keep saying, like, if you got rid of the white way of knowing, like, until you get rid of that discourse, and until you get rid of that way of knowing, and then you, I guess you'd have to train a generation to not know that, but everything is already built upon that. Like, they even, like, Judith Butler, Peggy McIntosh, Patricia Hills Collins, a couple others, they disavow Foucault. They don't want to talk about Foucault because he's an old white man. They want to give this stuff to Judith Butler. Go ahead. Sorry.
I just want to clarify something, because it seems like some of our audiences are not very smart and they might get confused for why we're not saying this. It's because we assume that it's apparent. Yeah, but here we okay, so we all can see how obviously racist and disgusting and vile it is to assume science belongs to white people, right? The only reason why none of us is pointing that how ridiculous that is because we are assuming everybody here is on that page. Like, we don't think needs to be spelled out.
No, right? Seriously, man. What Ali, you're a doctor. I set up communication systems. I mean, like, you know, Armin, come on.
Not only that,
but even historically, right? Even historically,
it's bullshit. It's bullshit. I mean, there's a quote from Plato that talks about the advancements in mathematics in Egypt and said, you know, can you count 1, 2, 3? Do you know how to add? He goes, little children in Egypt play games with mathematics that men in Greece to them seem like pigs.
Things that begin with Al. Al means the, right? Yeah. They have Arab and Semitic origins. So algebra, right? Yeah. What did not belong to white people. Something that the Arabs invented. They're called.
Yeah, so if you sucked in math, blame it on the Arabs.
Yeah, those the numbers that we call them Arabic numerals because that's what they are. Right, zero. The concept of zero, sifr, zephyr. Right, like that's an Arabic. So this whole idea, that these are science, is, you know, this white territory. That itself is this internalization of this fucking racist narrative that, you know, white people invented science. It's bullshit. Okay.
But let's say here's the thing. Let's make it even more
alcohol universal. By the way, just want to say alcohol.
Let's also make it even more universal. Let's say that everything that Ali said was not true. Let's say that throughout history, like, let's say science and scientific thinking and, you know, and enlightenment values were throughout history until recently, white people had complete monopoly over that, right? Let's say that was true. Even if that was the case, which obviously it's not, they still fucking work, right? They still work. They're still superior methods to narratives and storytelling that these woke people want to take us back to. That was the religious, this whole anti-science, hey, let's just, everybody has their own story, let's just tell stories, and that would be the way we figure out what is and what not even what's true, what we accept as part of acceptable discourses based on your personal experiences. That's what we have been fighting religion for the past couple of decades, right? Seems to be more powerful in some circle movements is coming and saying the exact same thing. Religious, I mean, they're even more ridiculous than religious people, because as much as anti-scientific and anti-logic Christianity and Islam so transparently was, like, they're like, hey, look, science is good, but that's not the only way to get to the truth. There's other ways, revelation, faith, you know, all of that is also ways of getting at the truth. And how much we fought that, this is worse, because I never heard Muslims say, like, look, there's other ways of looking at reality and 2 + 2 could be 5, right? I've never heard Muslims say that. I've never heard Christians say 2 + 2 could be 5, right?
I read about that 2 + 2 = 5 thing, and I saw, you know, all the stuff that James Lindsay was saying about it and everything, and they got into this really nasty debate, and I found it actually hilarious. And there were better examples you could give. Like, if you want to make that 2 + 2 argument, you could talk about a triangle on a geodesic surface, right? You could talk about that because that's actually a real example. The angles on a triangle add up to 180, but if you draw them on the surface of the Earth, if you go from the equator to the North Pole, North Pole back down to the equator, you've got 3 right angles. Right, so then the total is 270 degrees. Yeah. So that itself, that is a better example of how, you know, some of these things don't work, whether you're talking about Euclidean geometry or non-geometry. But the example itself was so bad, and that's what actually made it.
But it's not just that the example. Okay, so there's an original point, and there was a bad example that was being used to make that point. But it's not just. Hold on, Ali. It's not just the example was bad. It's what people did with that example after, right? So I'm not talking about the original point. Other people went with that and took that and ran with it. And they were saying stuff like, if you come out and say the answer to 2 + 2 is only 4,
you're racist and sexist.
You're racist and you're being oppressive.
That debate on 2 + 2 = 5 is important. Okay, and because it's a stupid debate, but it's important for it shows exactly what they think. Right? It's not 2 + 2 = 4. It's not 2 + 2 = 5. To say that 2 + 2 = 4 is to only privilege one way of knowing and one way of looking at things. 2 + 2, given
that wasn't the argument that was being made by the person who did it.
I know that, but if you go further into it, if you went further down, but the argument coming from the critical race theorists or the critical social justice people is that, and there was mathematicians saying, okay, if you have these conditions in mathematics, you can get 2 + 2 = 5. It's not that they wanted to say 2 + 2 = 5. It's 2 + 2 can equal whatever you want based on your view of the objective world. So if you want 2 + 2 can equal unicorn, all right? It's not that 2 + 2 has to equal 5, or 2 + 2 can equal 5 in some situations. It's 2 + 2 given any way of knowing and anyone's worldview can then equal whatever they want.
Oh, because the guy making the argument was black.
It's not because the guy making the argument was black. It's that's the argument from ethnic mathematics. Okay, there is in Seattle, K-12, the curriculum for mathematics is through this ethnic lens. So there are different ways of knowing maths. So, and this in order, higher order mathematics, or if you want to talk about modular math, so if you talk about, base three, four is written as 1-1 because of how base three works, right? When you're teaching little kids the basics, like when you're teaching kids the alphabet, you don't go from teaching them the alphabet to expect them to write Shakespeare. There's structure to that. They want to take that structure away. They say, no, there is no structure. That structure is a white way of thinking, and that way of thinking is oppressive to people of color.
Is Obed's idea getting cut sometimes for you?
A little like that, but that's it.
Yeah, maybe don't touch the wires. Have you heard the example feminist glaciology? Is that how you say it? Glaciology? Studying glaciers.
Yeah, I read that. I read that stupid paper in like 2016. It was horrible.
Can you tell us about that? Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
This is gonna be great.
It's a few years ago, so I'm gonna screw this up, and someone who's read it is gonna fucking flip out on me. But I read it because James Lindsay and Peter Boghossian wrote The Conceptual Penis. And it was, I think that was a kind
but those
of
are like jokes. The part, okay, those are jokes. Was a serious. Okay. The feminist glaciology was a serious study.
Yeah. But like I said, they wrote this, I think, in response to that. Now, feminist glaciology is you need a feminist lens through glaciology. So the way the runoff from the water comes down, that's like, I can't remember if they said it was masculine or it's feminine. It's coming into the sea, the way it's meeting, and a feminist viewpoint, an intersectional viewpoint will give you a view on glaciology that a regular thing does. Okay. Now, that feminist glaciology thing, right? I worked up north for 4 years. I worked in IT. I was involved in some meetings because I had to, set up communications and stuff like that. I understand speaking to Inuit elders and saying, okay, how far back did this glacier, when you were a kid, like how much larger was that glacier? That's important, right? To see trends and stuff like that you might miss. But they want to take, native knowledge, and they want to use that for environmentalism, and they're saying that's another way of knowing. So ethnographies and storytelling, and shaman or whatever, will help solve environmental crises. No, there is knowledge there. There is historical knowledge. You can talk to them about how the land has changed and how the herds have migrated and stuff like that. And that's important. But to say that is a way of solving problems, and that's what they're actually saying. They're saying that we have privileged the written word. We've privileged white ways of knowing. And so you have to privilege storytelling again, because that's a, ethnic way of knowing. I mean, again, you were talking about, you know, like Arabs and stuff like that. There's Stoic thought going back to India 2,000 years. Mm-hmm. There's this guy named Jacob. He was in Ethiopia 100 years before Locke and Kant and Hume. He'd studied rhetoric. It was a local term for rhetoric in Ethiopia. And then he studied under the Jesuits. And he got into trouble with the king because he made some fun of Christianity. So he went and hid in a cave for 2 years until the king died. In that cave, people found his writings. I don't know how long ago. I read this article just this year. They found his writings. His writings were similar 100 years before Hume, Locke, and Kant. He wrote down the same kind of thinking. So if you read David Deutsch's book, The Beginning of Infinity, he talks about different pockets of enlightenment throughout history and how each built off each other and refined. And I know we, the two of you know this, like I'm not, you know, like, but they disregard that. And the enlightenment that we think of was then a refinement of everything from the Greeks, the Arabs, stuff from India, stuff from China. And then you took those ideas and you refined it. And it's the whole process of it is to continually refine it. They take that idea of critical thinking and they turn it around into that critical lens, like the problematizing or the querying. And so just like Deepak Chopra throws fucking quantum around, you know, these guys say, oh, you want to be anti-racist. So like, again, Jonathan Rauch's book, Kindly Inquisitors, if you haven't read it, awesome read, really prescient. And he talks about this stuff in the late 80s, early 90s. And he talks about the humanitarian threat to liberal science. And when he says liberal science, he's meaning the Enlightenment. And it was, again, out of the stuff of repressive tolerance. There were speech codes in universities saying, don't do, what was it? Like, we have to make sure that there's no racist talk because that might harm students of color. It's always talking about the harm that speech will do. No one, like, focus on the harm censorship does. Like, we brought up the Islamic Golden Age. If the ethic of Averroes and Avicenna and Ibn Khaldun and countless others that they bar in the Middle East,
Razi,
if that ethic, which I'm not, I don't agree with everything those guys wrote. That's 1,000 years ago, for Christ's sakes. They're a little archaic, but some of those core ideas were there. If that ethic still survived instead of the Al-Ghazali ethic of only studying something that is the glorification of Islam, when the Mongols receded, they might have gone back to Europe or to India or to China and tried to reclaim some of the knowledge that had been lost there. Like, if that ethic had survived in the Middle East after the Mongols had pulled back and they continued that way of thought, you might have seen an enlightenment in this, in the Middle East, at the same time as it was ascending in Christianity, in Christendom. You might have seen it in the Caliphate as well as in Christendom. Something different, something slightly similar, but same basic ideas. So this whole thing with the critical race theory and all these things, they all say it in every single book. If you disagree with theory, you're attacking them. I mean, like, identity is key. So getting back to the religious thing, if you look at intersectionality, so that intersectional framework when it came in, so take critical race theory, post-colonialism, intersectionality, think of that like as intersectionality is Christianity. Post-colonialism, critical race theory, you know, intersectional feminism, that is like Catholicism, Lutheranism, different variations on, because they play off identity and stuff. Think of like queer theory and fat studies as Orthodox Christianity. You know, slightly different holidays. They look at things again slightly different. In queer theory, identity, like in both of these things, identity is king. Identity is the most important. But in critical race theory, your racial identity is fixed. Like Rachel Dolezal can't be transracial, right? There was a paper that, again, they mentioned that in the book. There was a paper that someone wrote, and they printed it in Hypatia, and Hypatia had to pull it. And Hypatia is like some famous feminist journal. They had to pull it, and they got a lot of flack. The person got a lot of flack because they said, why don't we have a transracial identity? And they were trying to work off, you know, like transgenderism.
Which is interesting because the races –
are not as different.
Fraction
is different
totally. But in critical race theory and in the intersectional aspect of that, your blackness, okay. And again, if race goes with identity and all that, it's your race, it's melanin plus ideology. So, you know, Kanye puts on a MAGA hat, Kanye ain't black. You don't vote for Joe Biden, you ain't black. They're like Nicole Hannah Jones, like revisionist history. Fuck. You know, she wrote that when Biden said that, she's like, oh, no, we know that there's a difference between being racially black and politically black. Like I think it was this past Friday or the Friday before, Thomas Chatterton Williams, Barry Weiss were on Bill Maher and they were talking. And again, one of these race theorists, blue checkmark idiot, oh, they're having a talk about race, not one person of color, because Thomas Chatterton Williams says, no, I want to go past race, which I think he's right. And like, we're talking about how this stuff has spread, right? This has been in the College of Education, like critical race theory, before intersectionality came into it, queer theory. Okay, critical theory and postmodernism has been in the colleges of education. So these are the people who create the curriculum and train the teachers since 85, as far as I can tell, maybe before.
Okay. Before.
When the intersectional framework came
before, it's the 70s feminist movement and all that. And that's actually
what. Okay, but like I'm talking about this specific thing, like the feminist movement and all that. In the colleges of education.
Were crazier. There were the radical aspect of it. Like they were doing a shit that, you know, that was way, way more insane.
I'm not talking about the students and the rioting and stuff like that. I'm talking about the actual colleges where they train the teachers. I'm talking about the scholarship that was going on, not the radical stuff that going on the campuses, not the, you know, not the protesting and stuff like that. I'm talking about
the scholarship a bit. Like, so for instance, and this is the thing I was going to talk about, you know, how Armin was showing those circles. Mm-hmm. There's a central circle where you have the, you know, the critical race theorists, the jihadists, and, you know, everything. And then there's the other people who.
Oh, wait, I didn't show it.
And influenced by it. I think there's a wider circle beyond that is interested in one or two core ideas that make sense. And they generally discard the rest, and the rest of it doesn't make sense. I am actually one of those people. So, for example, with feminism, the feminist...
Well, let me first show the circle. Okay, so you have the center, critical theories people. These are people who are like the imams and the fundamentalists. They know the founding text, the original text. They read it, they understand it, they agree with it. And then we have the wider circle. I may disagree with this a little bit, but I consider them the woke people, the Wokistani people. They have not read the text. They don't know exactly what's in it, but the narrative that is coming out of the central circle, from the critical theories people, is influencing the things that they repeat, the things that they say, the things that they do, the protests that they're involved with, and all that stuff. Without actually them having, it's basically the Muslim, kind of like the Muslim who know you can recognize the thing, the narrative that they're saying is influenced by Islam, but they themselves never bother to like read the Hadith or the Quran. And if you find some verses from the Quran that they might be problematic, they wouldn't know if it's how to explain it, or they wouldn't even know that this was a Quranic verse. So same thing, if you go walk to wokey people and you actually tell them how anti-science, anti-liberal critical theory is, a lot of them would be either confused or didn't know that that's actually the case.
But, disagree with them even. And I actually think there's a wider circle beyond that, where there are people who aren't really aware of it. They just think there are one or two core ideas from everything that are good. No. So, for instance,
I completely disagree with. No, here's the thing. Here's Ali. The thing that you're saying is this is.
Right, let me say it. Come on. Okay,
you stay.
No, go ahead. First, make your thing so that I can. It's all right.
No, so the thing is that the liberal movement, the liberals or the Enlightenment values people, okay, they do not share anything with these idiots, okay? But they have been very successful, okay? Very, very successful, because the results that they produce has brought more people out of misery than any set of ideas ever in the history of mankind, right? Yep. So what they do is like, just like Islam and Christianity and the alt-right, what they do is sometimes they pretend that these are some of the narratives that they, you know, the piggy bank on the success of the liberal liberal ideas, right? So the ideas that you're saying that some people comes from the Wokistani circle that you agree with, they do not come from them.
I know
they're just piggybacking on them to get them. So here's the thing. When I listen to alt-right people, right, I consume a lot of their content. They say, like, they openly say, we don't believe in free speech. We are supporting free speech because that's the train that we get on to get to our destination, and we'll get off it as soon as we're in power, right?
Yeah, it's like the Muslim.
So they say that, right? But, and again, these wokey people, sometimes they also in their own circles are like, listen, we will support these idiot liberals, and we'll, like, and sometimes because they are sometimes in line, you know, you work with your enemy when they're moving you to the destination that you want, right?
Yeah.
But they, yeah, exactly. So you, the things that you agree with, they don't come from there. They're just using those narratives to get to the next destination.
So I reject it completely. I'm not saying that they come from it or anything. I'm just saying that there is an overlap. So what happens is,
what's the overlap?
I'll tell you. Let me just explain it. So here's the thing where I look at ideas, right? I'm not a socialist. I don't think socialism overall, established socialism in societies purely, is a very good idea. But we've gotten a few things from socialism, like social safety nets, you know, like social security. You have, you know, universal healthcare and stuff like that, that I think has been useful. Now, with this woke and the critical theory and everything, I don't really think that there's anything in it that I like. The one thing, right, that is a common thread with all of them, and these are the things that I oppose, okay, very vehemently, is authoritarianism, okay, stifling of speech, censorship, and just saying that the way that we think is right, and, you know, just ideological combativeness, you know, with people, and suppressing dissenters. Okay, so I see that in the woke cult. I see that in religion and Islam and the other religions as well. I see that in the Trumpism. All of them have a lot of power. Islam, as you know, has a huge amount of power everywhere. That's what this podcast is about. That's what we talk about all the time. The woke cult has a lot of power here, as Obed is saying, in universities and in moving into courts now, actually moving into a lot of the justice system as well.
It's moving into a lot more than that, man.
Yeah,
it's moving into mathematics. We're going to have feminist mathematics.
Government. It's in fucking government forming.
I understand. Right. On the other hand, then you have this whole Trumpist cult, which also, you know, authoritarian tendencies. They actually fetishize authoritarianism much, much more openly. There are studies that have shown that people who support, like, this kind of far right thinking are more likely to be prone than susceptible to authoritarian cues from their leaders. Right. This is something that actually has a White House. It actually has a lot of all the judges that are being appointed. Again, the federal judges that are hundreds and hundreds of them. You know, behind while Trump is tweeting, you know, all the stuff that's happening with Mitch McConnell in the Senate, you know, they're doing that in the US. The far right it's on the rise in Europe. You know, there's a Brexit things, all of these other, Poland, the party in Poland that got 46% of the vote.
Yeah, but what are you saying?
So my problem is when any of these ideas, I don't care about, like, these people and saying all these things and these ideas, and that's just something that you can talk about, but it's very important to be able to talk about them. The problem for me is when it becomes authoritarian.
Yeah, Ali, but can you clarify, what do you share with them? There's nothing to share with them.
So I share different things with different people. One of the problems, and so that's one problem. Like, I go against authoritarianism. So people will say, why are we
I know what you disagree with them.
Guys, you talk a lot more throughout
the I know, but can you just get to the sharing part?
I am getting to the point. So, you know, they'll say you're against Islam, but you're also against, you know, why are you now talking against, you know, Trump and all this stuff when he has a problem? Both of them are authoritarian structures. Okay. So what was the question you were asking, Armin?
You keep saying it seemed like you were suggesting that you didn't want to dismiss them altogether because there's some good things that you can take out of it.
Not from theory.
But that's what you even gave an example, like, you know what, socialism. Hold on, said like socialism is, I agree with socialism, but socialism had some gifts for us that we took, and then we got rid of socialism, and we're like, oh, thank you for that. The rest of you, we're going to throw in the garbage. And you said, you also suggested that when it comes to these woke people, there is some stuff that you agree with them on, but you don't like their methods or something like that. I heard you say that a couple of times. What is it?
So this is a little complicated because it's a matter of perception. So for instance, let's take the Black Lives Matter movement. There is a Black Lives Matter movement, and there's a Black Lives Matter organization. There are sub-factions of Black Lives Matter. Some of them are, you know, sort of very overtly Marxist. You know, there's different kinds of people. There's the critical race theory, Black Lives Matter components and everything. But overall, there's a question of police brutality, and there's a question of systemic racism in law enforcement and reforming the police. Those are the three things. Right. There are conservatives, there are liberals, there are libertarians, there's like all these woke people. They all share that together, a lot of them, that, you know, this is something that we need to go up against. Now, what happens is that people say that Black Lives Matter overall, just the term, the hashtag, is a woke mob. Okay, and I disagree with that. I don't think the largest protest in U.S. history entirely, collectively, is a woke mob. I don't think that it's monolithic. Another example.
Okay, so you just contradicted yourself. Do you understand that?
Okay, how did I contradict myself? No, I'm talking about terminology when people say.
Okay, because you said that there's something from the woke cult that we could take and you could appreciate, but then you also now you're arguing the things that you actually appreciate is not part of the woke. So if it's not part of woke, then there's nothing from the woke that you're actually appreciating
The problem is a perception of terminology. So if you are saying that Black Lives Matter is not a woke thing, then you're right. I'm not taking anything from the woke people. But there is a widespread among the people who are like really saying, you know, critical theory sucks, the woke cult and everything, which I agree with. They're also saying, a lot of these people are saying that Black Lives Matter is this wokeness, critical theory gone out of control. I'm seeing it everywhere. And you guys are seeing it everywhere too. Right?
Well, so
I don't agree with that. I think there are factions in these movements. With the feminist movement in the 70s, which achieved a lot and did a lot of right things, legislatively got a lot of changes done. That was liberal feminism. Then there was radical feminism that said, okay, no, it's not enough for a woman to be...
Hold on.
Mm. Not enough for a woman to just be a lawyer. But we have to change the whole legal system so it's not patriarchal. Then there was Marxist feminism, right? And there were these different factions. We took the liberal feminism, and the rest of it is just kind of at the fringes.
So now, exactly what you're doing is exactly what far right people do.
The problem with this is that what people do is when they say woke, right? They put all of feminism under the woke label.
You know what far right people do, Ellie, that you're basically copying right now. You know how people over accuse people of racism, right? They do it all the time, right? And the far right people come and they say some racist, misogynist, homophobic, transphobic stuff. And then we're like, okay, that was racist. And they say, well, everything is racist these days. Anything, I can't say anything that is not racist. So they use that as a cover to get away by actually saying pushing for genuine homophobic, transphobic, racist stuff. And when you try to call them out, they hide under this cover of over accusation and say, like, well, we're a victim of that too, right?
Go on.
Right, no, they do that, right? They fly under the radar, right? Just the same way that during the McCarthy times, during the Red Scare, communists actually managed to fly under the radar because everybody and their dog was being accused of communism, right? The genuine spies were flying under the radar, right? So the far right is also flying under the radar because of this misfiring everywhere, right? In the same way, just because some people from the other side overuse and overlabel what's woke these days. Like, I mean, I'm being accused of being woke. Okay. I get accused of being woke a lot of times. So just because people are just throwing that label around everywhere and misusing it, that doesn't mean like, well, if that's your definition of woke, then, oh, okay. Okay. Then I'm also, some of you I like, well, we don't, I mean, but you know, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about genuine anti-science, anti-enlightenment, anti-liberal values, and that's what we're referring to.
For the first hour of this, I've been mostly quiet because I do agree with pretty much everything you were saying. But the problem with some of these labels is that the goalposts shift as time goes on. For example, regressive left really doesn't mean anything anymore. I mean, we used to talk about it at a certain time that there was a regressive left. And then what happened was that, okay, if you are apologizing for Islam, right, knowing the problems, you're regressive left. Then later, well, if you're not, you know, if you're against immigration, like if you're not against the immigration of Muslims coming in, you're aggressive leftist. Oh, you know, if Trump wants to ban Muslims, if you're not against the Muslim ban, then you're aggressive leftist. And then it kept on moving to the point where, you know, you have to, it doesn't.
But it's clear that what we are referring to here,
The thing is, when you have labels like this, they do change based on the.
Yeah, I don't care about the labels. Okay. You know what we're referring to.
Okay. What I'm saying, Armin.
I just want to say one thing, like finish up, Ollie.
Let me answer the last thing Armin said. When it comes to, as I said, that for the first hour, what we are talking about, I'm very aware of what we're talking about, and I pretty much 100% agree with what you guys were saying. I'm just saying that there is a problem with these terms and the moving goalposts where sometimes they're not clearly defined, and 20 to 30 to 40 to 50% of the audience at any given time may have a completely different interpretation of what we mean by woke. A lot of people think that you're woke. A lot of people think I'm woke, and you know, that we're part of that cult, and that is going to change perceptions. So that's all I'm saying.
I get it. Like Yasmin will say something on Twitter.
Sorry,
and I will go. Yasmin will say something on Twitter, and I will go explain how that relates to an ideology or like something out of critical race theory, and I'll put down something that you know. Science is a white way of knowing. It's not for people of color. And I'll get attacked. Like I'll just mute it right away because I'll get attacked because, oh my God, how can you say something so racist? Blah, 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 blah. You're a woke asshole. Okay. So I think when you're talking about terminology matters, yes, because I'll give you guys a common enemy because I think you're both making some slight mistakes.
Okay.
So the little circle thing that Armin did, I could look at it this way, is that core center is the Scientologists at like Tom Cruise's level that know all about Xenu and all that shit, right? Mm. The people on the outside are still in the cult. Like you can't leave even before you just started taking your audits and stuff like that. You're in the cult. You can't leave. Like they make it almost impossible to leave Scientology and all that, right? Like any of these cults. So that's what those people are. Now, and this again comes with the problem of how widespread this stuff is. It's gotten to political science, it's gotten into history, it's gotten to English, it's gotten into sociology. Okay, so
to STEM now, it's getting into
I know it's getting into STEM, but like it's getting there. But the problem with like, and the reason I'm focused on these humanities things, so someone who thinks, so again, woke, it's been used off and on for different things throughout the 20th century, but mainly for being aware of issues dealing with oppression of Black people. Now, the term in the Black Lives Matter sense or in the critical race theory sense, that comes from the Black feminism and the Black power movement of the 60s, right? And back in the 70s, late 60s, early 70s, like there was no memes and things like that. It didn't really get into culture. And they weren't really talking about it too much, but it was here, the words were here or there. They were in papers. And again, like around 2007, 2008, Erykah Badu came out with some song. I know who she is. I know some of her music. I don't. She mentions the word woke. And that brings it into culture. And brings it out. And I think Ali, you mentioned it was in a Spike Lee movie. I don't know which one.
It was in culture for a long time. This whole thing with the Black liberation theology, right?
Yeah.
Preached at Black churches for the longest time. Like this critical race theory.
Okay. When I'm saying culture, I'm talking general culture, not just in Black churches.
African American studies departments and universities for the longest time. It's been here. It's been here for
Again. Like what I was saying to the Erykah Badu thing, I'm talking about the general population it's been in universities. It's stayed in there. It hasn't gone out. If it was talked about, it was talked about in very small circles. When Erykah Badu bought it out and brought that term out, it got known by more people, right? And then when Black Lives Matter brought it back in 2013, again, when I say brought it back, they made it, again, more general, people using it. And they were looking back, again, at the Black Power movement, the Black Liberation movement, the Black Feminist movement, of when they were using that in the late 60s, early 70s. I'm not saying that it ever went away. I'm just saying that it never got turned into a meme.
Abid, when woke first came out, I thought of it as a positive term. This is what I mean about the changing, how this stuff changes. Because I thought of it as a term of being aware of prejudices in society, being aware of, the power systems and systems of oppression, which do exist. They're real. Okay. And they're being aware of these things and educating yourself about them. It wasn't about, I wasn't thinking, okay, no, I have to look at everything in a racist lens or critical theory or anything. I wasn't thinking about anything. Just woke, just very generally meant to be aware of these things so that you know, and you can do something about them.
Yes and no.
Became associated with all of this sort of really dogmatic authoritarianism, stuff.
Okay, no, but yes and no. Like the term woke initially was, yes, to be awake, to have woken up to the oppression of Black people. So, and part of that, again, comes from the postmodernist thing, and it comes from like that materialist side of Marxist feminism where, you know, capitalism is whiteness. Anything that pushes white patriarchal systems, anything that pushes whiteness, anything that that is keeping the Black man down. So even though a Black person can own a business, it's still whiteness. That had part of this into it as well. This what they're talking about.
What do you mean?
Okay, like so, the Black feminist movement, when it started bringing woke into it, like the Black liberation, like you're talking about the churches, yes, that was, we have been oppressed, but again, it was talking about, some of it was talking about the hidden structures, because part of it was coming from, like, these people were informed by critical theory in that form, and they were informed by postmodernism. So there are these hidden structures that are keeping down hidden power discourses. And even like, so when you looked on the materialist side of things, it was capitalism, it was business, it was economics, it was politics. All these are structures that are, you have to tear away these structures. To be woke is to be aware of those structures. And that's in that 60s and 70s. And yes, it was a term of pride, and they used it in pride.
Yeah, and it is a good thing too, to be aware of those systems.
But they took it a little too far. And even back then, they were taking it too far, like Angela Davis, like completely dismantle the capitalist system. Like they were talking about things like that, which then again morphed into these newer things. So this new version
by the way, that happened in the feminist movement too. So In the 70s feminist movement, you know, you had the liberal feminism, you had radical feminism, then you had Marxist feminism, where they were saying that capitalism is inherently, sexist. So that happened, but those things got... They fell by the wayside. And Armin, I think while you were away, I was just saying that, like, for me, woke, and this is how these words changed. Like, woke basically meant to be aware of racism, to be aware that there are systems of oppression that exist. It did not mean, like, when I used to think of, like, the term woke when I first heard it, it didn't mean that, you know, all white people are racist and everybody's inherently racist and race exists everywhere. That's not what it was. It's a, you know, there are shitty things in the world right now still. Things are better. There are shitty things, and we should be aware of them. That's it. So
given you also acknowledge that words change meaning, you could understand that when we are using it, we're talking about the people that Obeid and Susanna are referring to, the people that are for abolishing the, not just capitalism, but for abolishing all form of structure and every institution.
As I said, the first hour of this, I completely agree with everything you said. Because
so that's what we're referring to. You keep arguing semantics, but we're referring to.
I'm saying that eventually the meaning is going to change.
I don't care. We use the new word later.
That word that you have for the critical theory and the critical race theory thing, I don't think that that's as widespread and an overblown a problem as everybody thinks it is.
Okay, let's get into that.
Here's why I'm thinking. Okay, again, what you're saying, like, there's some people, like, okay, again, I don't want to pick on her, and I don't really know her, but when you're talking about Shannon, she's saying, I'm woke, right? That's not the woke cult that you're talking that's around them. I don't consider that. Okay, the way this has infused a lot of different topics, again, this is being taught in high schools. Like I saw Coleman Hughes talking about this, and he said he was being taught intersectionality in high school in grade 2012. Mm-hmm. Right? This was in K through 12 in some states, and it doesn't matter blue or red, okay, starting between 2010, 2012. It was in middle schools in Canada around 2014, 2015 in three provinces. Mm-hmm. It is now teaching kids K through 12. Okay.
What is the problem with the intersectionality that you have being taught? That this is another thing. This is why.
No, he's getting into what
they're doing. I don't know. I'm getting straight. Okay. In New York City, Asian parents are looking at suing the school system because, okay, you read that thing Mookie wrote in Medium, right? How his kids were saying they were ashamed they were half white. Okay. That's coming from this shit. Okay, that is, they are telling students, they've told administrators and teachers, I forget his name, he's the head of the school commission or whatever, like he had a meeting, he had a conference, and he was talking to administrators and teachers and stuff like that. You have to be culturally sensitive with time, because being on time is a white thing. So if students of color are late, or if their assignments are late, you don't judge them as harshly. It's separate but fucking equal.
Yeah.
So that's okay. No. That's in school. They want to teach kids like that. They're showing
This is what Ali does. Okay. We keep giving examples of him. Like, look at these universities. Look at, and he's like, oh my God, that's ridiculous. And I'm like, oh my God, look at these government institutions. Look at these mayor's office. Look at this, what the state government is doing. Look at this, what this is doing. Look at this museum. Look at this. Look at what they're doing in the media. Look at what they're doing in like academics. No, oh, here's more and more. Hold on. Let me finish. Hold on, just wait for one second.
Finish what you're saying. Hurry up.
Every time you're like, Ali, when you give him one of these examples, he looks at it, is like, oh yeah, that's ridiculous, right? I don't know how many more examples we have to give you for you to understand that this has become institutionalized in many parts of America right now.
All right, so
in Canada, fuck America, it's in our government. Our fucking woke ass shoe polish model of a prime minister has fucking created a secretariat, an anti-racism secretariat, okay? It's in our fucking government.
Here's the thing. What is... Okay, hold on. So you have all of these things being taught to kids, okay? So you've got intersectionality. Another term, again, when I first heard it, it was a wonderful idea. It's the idea that we're not just oppressed in one way. People who are not...
And I acknowledge that. I acknowledge that was a good idea, but then she turned it to shit.
So let's talk about what to shit means. Anything when it's turned to shit in all of these things, whether you're talking about the wokeness, critical theory, intersectionality, Trumpism, religion, it turns to shit when it becomes authoritarian, when it becomes overpowering, when it becomes institutionalized.
Armin, I want to... Read the fucking paper mapping the margins, okay? Like, honestly, I'll send you a reading list. Read this shit, right? No. It turns to shit right away. She writes mapping the margins. It's a good... She brings up some very good points. I said that. I can give you the good points Derek Bell brings up, okay? Mm-hmm. These people bring up some valid points with valid criticism. No.
Wait!
Just hold on a second, man. At the end of the paper, she says... Right away, to get rid of the liberal ethic, she says it straight out. We have to get rid of the ethic where race has no social significance. They don't want color blindness. They want everything to be significant on race, and then she puts the postmodern ethic to it. Right away, that makes it authoritarian because there is no other way of looking at it. It is anti-enlightenment from its inception. Okay, right. They are non-overlapping magisteria. So yes, the nice little thing she said at the start of the paper, I agree with that. But she didn't map the margins. She fucking gerrymandered them. Because when you add this shit and you include post-colonialism into it, that's why you get a paper saying FGM, opposing FGM is colonialism. Okay,
okay.
That's why an intersectional feminist looking through this lens will especially now that since 2010-ish, when they've added post-colonialism and all that to it, they will not talk about the hijab or the niqab, because even though it is oppressive to women, to put the ethic that is oppressive is a white ethic, and to put that on brown people is colonialism. The protests that were going on in Hong Kong that are still going on now, okay, again, it's from this shit. Okay, in November,
I've put that in my book. I've put this shit in my book. I'm not. That is not the point. I feel like you guys aren't even trying to understand what I'm saying.
No, but there is no good intersection. Okay, like intersectionality. You brought up a good idea.
Your point,
you turned it to shit. Yes. You turned it to shit right away.
I completely understand your point.
Intersectionality from its inception was garbage.
Is it a surprise?
You both are missing the point, I think. I think we're not moving on. You guys are just agreeing. We all agree on these ideas being shit. Okay, yeah. And you keep arguing against you're not arguing against each other. You both, everything Obey says, Ali also acknowledged as shitty ideas. Okay, and that's not the disagreement here. The disagreement is how widespread this idea is. And Ali keeps wanting to be like, oh, this is the definition. This is the definition. I don't care. The ones that we agree that are shitty, okay, whatever the fuck you want to call it, hold on. Yeah. How widespread those are. And I think sometimes, Ali, you're guilty of trying to lump the, you're like, oh, it's authoritarian. All the problems is because they're authoritarian. I think because of you're uncomfortable with terminology that people associate with the left, right? Because you have taken a side. And you the set of ideas that all of us are recognizing are problematic, you don't want to associate labels with them that makes them a left-leaning problem. You want to associate labels with them that make people usually use for right-leaning problems. Like, that's why you keep saying authority. Here's the thing. It doesn't matter.
Armin, I have no problem. We have talked about the regression.
Okay. I know you agree. I know. See, this is okay. I know you agree that this is problematic.
No, you're not understanding. You're still not getting it. Okay. What I'm saying is that some of these ideas that come in, right, that began as these ideas, like, for instance, which example do I give now?
Whatever you say, you probably agree on.
Huh? Yeah, yeah.
You're going to say, I probably agree on, and that's not the point we're going to try to make, but go on.
So here's, okay, I'll give you an example. So what people do, the majority of people, okay, and you've seen this, you've seen the Harper letter, you've seen the Biden nomination, you know that Bernie got outvoted, you know that all
the point.
A healthy pushback against the authoritarian aspect of the left. Now, when you take something like intersectionality and what people, the majority of people, including liberals, take from the idea of the intersectionality is that they take the idea that, okay, all of us have multiple different group identities that have privileged or disadvantaged us in different ways, period. When they look at Black Lives Matter, they say, well, there's systemic racism and there's police brutality, and we need to reform the police. Period. That's what they do. They don't get into, like, most people, if you say, well, that means we have to dismantle the entire capitalist structure, they'd be like, okay, that's bullshit. I like the idea that, you know, we need to be aware of oppression. We need to be aware of these things. But I'm not doing all this stuff about, you know, abolishing the police and all that. Nobody, the majority of people are not. Like, people are freaking out about, oh, they're going to abolish the police. They're going to abolish the police. They're gonna, because of this one fucking town in Seattle, this little thing that happened.
All right, Ali, if you want to address what we're actually saying here, okay, do you want to go and fight against other people that are saying things that we're not saying?
Okay,
or do you want to actually address what we're saying?
Okay, but you're talking about what's wrong with intersectionality. It's not just intersectionality.
We're talking about how widespread it is, Armin.
K through 12, mm-hmm. right, all across the United States, it was in three provinces in Canada. Up until last year, it was starting to spread into more. Okay, K through 12. And it's not just teaching intersectionality as, oh, it's just it's just the way our intersections. No. It is literally teaching kids that you were oppressed by him, you were oppressed by her, you oppressed them. It is showing kids how to push themselves in that oppression Olympics. Okay.
Okay, you're focusing on one example, one legitimate example, which is a very good example. But what Obeid is saying, there is countless of examples like the problematic thing that Obeid is in many places. And this is what Ali does. He dances around instead of like, we're saying like, look, Ali, here, it's here, it's here, it's here, it's here. And he said like, well, those other people who are exaggerating the problem, I don't agree with those other people who are exaggerating that problem over there. Okay, well, but, I don't, we're not talking about those other people. Okay, we're talking about the fact that it's mainstream. I'm talking about the fact that it's mainstream based on all these examples that we have in front of us now.
Just give me extreme left, right? The extreme left has not taken over liberalism the way the extreme.
Oh my God! See, you're fighting imaginary claims that we're not making.
Just give me.
You are kind of talking about widespread.
No. Just give me a couple of minutes here, okay? Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to give a timeline, and again, this is from me speaking to a lot of people and reading a lot of this stuff, right? And people I've spoken to kind of agree with this. And I'm only talking about this form of when the intersectional framework took over, which was around 91. Right? So when it went from feminist studies to gender studies, when critical race theory also got into the intersectional framework, when all this stuff came into that intersectional framework, all those subjects started being taught. Specific, like you had race studies, you have African American studies, you had critical legal studies. Now you had like critical race theory through the intersectional framework. The people who had the masters and the PhDs that got out with that stuff, it started about 91. You're coming out at the end of the 90s, like, you know, roughly that's about how long it would take to go through that, the process, more or less, right? You would have people who were already started their bachelors going to these schools. They got in, like they were already in the colleges of education. They were already in administrations of universities. More and more people started coming in to universities. Okay, media. There's a guy. I'll send you the paper. He wrote the article. He studied this for his PhD dissertation, for his PhD thesis. He looked at New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, and one other big newspaper. So like he wasn't looking at Vox or Vice or anything like that, right? Like he was looking at legitimate, large mainstream newspapers. And he took the number of times the word racism, race, white supremacy, all that kind of stuff was used. So it's just individual words in a whole edition of New York Times. So it's not like, you know, it's not going to be a large percentage, right? It's not like the word the or something. Right around 2008, it started growing up. Like it was a relatively flat curve, like little peaks here and there. It started going up. By about 2010, it was like doubled. By 2016, it had tripled. Someone else did a study in 2019, and it was number of articles. Same thing. This stuff, these people come in, okay, and again, it has infected not just these disciplines. It also, when you put out a sociology paper, you're looking at it this way. Well, you forgot this ethnography, you forgot this racism. And so they're not attacking the sociology. They're saying, well, you're missing out something on race. So these people, well, they've got a PhD in critical race studies. They know what they're talking about. So when government started looking for, okay, you had 9/11, you had, America's a racist country. So George Bush wants to do something. Let's go find some people. So we'll say we're dealing with racism. You know, they want to find they want to find someone to work on a super collider. They're going to go get a PhD in physics or whatever, right? Like they're going to go, PhD in critical race studies. These people got into civil service. These people, okay, right now under Trump, I'm not defending Trump. Trump is an asshole. I don't want Cheeto Man reelected. I think he's a fucking nightmare and a disaster. Like, I think that should be obvious. But the Pentagon is using, Pentagon is using anti-racism training. The Pentagon under Trump. It's in the Ministry of Finance. 2 years ago, the Treasury Department paid out something like $5 million to some fucking huckster. And these guys are hucksters. All right. It's not a small thing there, man. Okay. It is in our government. Okay. It's forming policy. Racism. You want to talk about institutional racism? This is institutionalized racism. The government of California has brought up the proposition to take away the discrimination laws because they want to introduce this in government because governments are going to get sued. There's things going on. I saw that. They know this is racist.
They know this is racist, and instead of stopping it, they want to change the law. They want to get rid of the discrimination law in California that's up for debate.
It's already passed one hurdle to take the laws, discrimination laws, away because this shit is forming policy. And you're saying, oh, well, it's just a few little people here and there, or the Barry Weiss letter, or the Harper's letter. Fuck that. Okay, that was like the PC in the 90s, in the late 80s, early 90s. I was there for that. I was in Concordia University when they were talking about the new blood policies from Blood Services Canada, and they were saying, okay, have you had, you know, intravenous drug use? Have you had multiple sex partners? There was complaints at Concordia University from the Gay and Lesbian Association that they were bringing in eugenics, because this is coming from some of this nonsense, okay? That the PC stuff. They pushed the PC stuff aside. Oh, postmodernism is dead. The so-called hoax. Oh, PC is dead. It went underground. So if you get rid of this, you know, the anti-racism training and work, the anti-racism in the curriculum, which, okay, get that shit out of schools. Okay, I will get back to that in a minute, and you can speak to Majid.
Well, we only have 10 more minutes, but I just want to address the fact that I think I know what the confusion is between what we're saying and what Ali is saying. I think Ali mishears us when I say it's spreading. These are the keywords that we're using. Okay, so Ali hears, even though I've never said that, Ali hears they're taking over. I've never said they're taking over. Okay, I say they're spreading, they're entering mainstream, and they have become institutionalized in many places. And yes, there are examples of some places that they have completely taken over, like some specific universities or private institutions, or right? But I never said they have taken over, right?
Right.
I've said they're spreading, they become mainstream, and they become institutionalized. Yes. That is not, and the fact that they haven't taken over is not mutual, is does not contradict any of these things that I'm saying.
Can and I the fact is that
they do want to take over, though that's obviously clear. Okay. But go,
I want to give my biggest fear. I think this.
No, I think this is basically what he was speaking. For what I was.
Oh yeah, sorry, you're right. So let Ali respond to what I said before. Right. So, and then Obey.
Yeah, I think another difference from it. I look. We all agree that this is a problem. We all agree that it is spreading. We all agree that there are areas. I gave the Seattle example, obviously, like in all these things where we're all seeing it happen, right? You're giving the California law example. I haven't read about it, but I obviously believe you. I know that these things exist. I think where we disagree is that I am not as pessimistic about it. I think there is a very healthy pushback towards it. I don't think it's going to take over. I think that one of the reasons it's being legitimized and why more mainstream liberals are kind of kowtowing to it is because you have a right-wing authoritarian government in power. And that when you have one extreme thing, Armin, you and I agreed on this in the last show too, that, you know, when you have the best way to fight against this stuff is, first of all, get rid of the other authoritarian on the other side, the far right government that is actually legitimizing this opposition. And then after that, you can have this dialogue. Right?
It's so, just weird to me, Ali, when a dangerous ideology is spreading and growing and becoming more and more part of the normal narrative, right? And being accepted by more people.
Hold on, you're not listening.
Yeah, I'm saying more and more becoming part of the normal narrative. I didn't say, okay, so you need to listen better. But while such a dangerous and toxic ideology is spreading so fast and its destructive nature is actually pushing back against all the gains of the civil rights movement, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to me for you to go like, well, it hasn't taken over. It hasn't taken over yet. It hasn't, it will probably not. Like, you're not helping, Ali. No, you're not helping. Imagine you understand how a distraction tactic it is. If I come and say, if in the United States and Canada, someone comes and says, like, hey, Islam is dangerous. You guys shouldn't be like promoting Islam like this. You know that if you talk to the regressive left and tell them about Islam, and you say like, guys, do not, you, no, guys, this is actually a genuinely horrible idea. Please do not promote it. If somebody comes in that situation and says, well, Islam hasn't taken over United States. It's Christianity that has taken over United States. Like, yeah, you agree with them, But you understand that that's not the point that you're making. You understand another that that's
analogy.
The fact.
Okay, no, but okay, I'm sorry.
Okay. Last thing, and then you can go on. Another religion analogy. The longest time we heard about creeping Sharia. The Sharia courts are coming in. The Sharia, and there were Sharia courts, and in the UK and everything, you know, there's all of this stuff going on about how Sharia is going to take over. Sharia courts are going to take over. The legal system is going to become overpowered. And I just never thought it was going to happen.
Good example. Good example. Okay, wait, show me. No.
I'm going to give you another one too.
Okay. No, let me answer that one.
Okay, no, hold on. You guys are going back and forth. Ali, I'm gonna like this is a concession because, okay. This is an overcorrection from the left, which I'm scared of. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I see an overcorrection from the right, and I'm terrified of that.
Right.
And the reason I'm pushing back against this, and I think the reason we should push back against this, is because this thing is so chameleon-like, and like I said, it is Jonathan Rauch's humanitarian threat. So when there are people who don't know what this stuff is, and I agree with you with, okay, majority of the people who are protesting with Black Lives Matter during the day and the peaceful people, they want police reform, which I agree with. They want to stop the police violence. They want to stop the systemic oppression, which I believe with. Okay, I don't think it's a systemic racism thing. I think racism is one of the smaller problems. But Black Lives Matter, as an organization, just to give you an example, 75 colleges last year had some form of segregated grad because of Black Lives Matter on the campus. Okay. Again, no. But just give me a second, man. The education thing, right? Starting in 2010 or 2012, it's been in high schools in the United States. It's been in middle schools in Canada since 2015, right? When you're teaching kids that if you're black, you've been oppressed. If you're white, you're being the oppressor, right? You know the African proverb, the child that doesn't feel, that is not embraced by the village will feel the warmth from the fire that he lights to burn it down? You're teaching a generation of kids that no one loves them, that they have been shunned by the village, or that they are the ones who have been doing the shunning. Okay. Speak to Majid about the recruitment for terrorism and extremism. They go after the weak. They go after the disenfranchised. They go after the kids who feel like loners.
Yeah.
Why did you have more British Muslims join ISIS than join the British military? Because they're learning this post-colonial crap, which is what's going on in England more than critical race theory, because in America.
Yeah, but okay. That's not what I'm teaching. I think one thing,
I need to respond.
A big part of this. So a big part of this, and this is again Ibram Kendi, you guys have heard of him, you know.
Yeah, I've read his crap.
Again, we disagree with a lot of things that he says. But he makes two good points that I like. You know, the first one is that he thinks that anti-white racism is real. He doesn't think that, you know.
Oh, just no people, shit.
Yeah, so he actually says it. He's like, it's all bullshit when people say you can't be racist against white people. There are many black people who are very racist against white people. He's right about that. I think all of us agree with him on that. The second thing that he says is that he's not talking about racism. It's obviously very difficult to change this, but he doesn't want to talk about racism in a pejorative sense. He wants to talk about racism in a descriptive sense. So it doesn't mean that there are racist people. It doesn't mean that there are bad people and racist people are bad. Okay. It means that there is a system, right, that has been in place, right, and which, for instance, in law enforcement, and in the healthcare system, the two places where it is backed up by a lot of data, right? And the people who are practicing within that system, they may be black, they may be the most woke people and the most non-racist people or anti-racist people in the world, but they're still operating under a system.
All right, this is getting too much bullshit. I need to address this because this is what Ali does all the time. Every time we have disagreements on
stop starting. Just talk to the point and say, this is what Ali does
all the time. No. This is what you do all the time. This is what you do. This is what you all the time. We have, instead of addressing the disagreements, you go and you distract everybody by actually constantly repeating the things that we agree on instead of actually addressing the disagreement that we're having, okay? Ibram Kendi, we don't have a problem with him acknowledging that anti-white racism is the real thing. We have a problem with the fact that he thinks testing kids
wrong.
As a whole.
Jesus what Christ. Said.
Hold on.
No. Okay. First of all, okay, the Kendi. Hold on a second with the Kendi thing. If you want to talk about the Kendi thing where he says, yes, black people can be racist to white people. Okay, no. I want to talk on this point. That's like Muslims saying, Islam says if you kill one innocent person, you're killing all of humanity. You're not finishing the rest of the verse. No. Yeah. No, you're not finishing the rest of it. Because then he goes on to say that white people have power, so the racism that is done to them from black people has no effect on them. Okay?
Right.
He goes on to say that. Now, the systems of oppression that he's talking about, when he says, oh, being racist is a bad thing, that's the same thing that Robin DiAngelo says. It's the same shit that that Crenshaw said, because civil rights movement made being racist a bad thing, so you can say I'm not racist, I'm a good person, and not look for your, not do that critical consciousness.
I agree with that.
For the hidden biases of race.
No, guys, you can't.
That is exactly what Kendi says.
Yeah,
so if you're going to bring up Kendi, if you're going to bring up Kendi's points, bring up exactly what he says. Okay. Not just say, "Oh, if you kill an innocent, you've killed."
No, Ali, you can't. You cannot do this, Ali. You interrupted me. No, you interrupted me. You don't. Apparently, you allowed to stop me from speaking, and I'm not doing that.
Let me remind you what I was responding to. You said that kids are being taught that you oppressed him. That person was oppressed by you. And I'm saying that is not right. That is not the way that they're teaching this. They're saying that these systems of oppression exist, and certain people are advantaged and disadvantaged because of them. They're not. That's very different from saying that, well, you are white, so you're the oppressor. There are fringe people who say that, like Robin DiAngelo. I mean, she's like the white fragility.
It's not fringe. Robin DiAngelo is not fringe. It's a best-selling book.
It's being used.
Policy, Ali. It's forming fucking policy.
You're living under a rock.
Get off of Twitter and get off of YouTube. And go
are you fucking
in my office?
It's forming policy. It's not just anti. Okay, Seattle. Okay, Seattle City.
Yeah,
separated black and white employees. White employees that professionalism was being white, objectivity was being white, and that's upholding white supremacy. It's segregating it. It's fucking separate but equal shit, man. It's forming policy.
It's going
it's not
backwards.
It's in the fucking Pentagon. It's in the Treasury Department. They just had a 3-day camp with
look
a federal
how,
department.
He's laughing this off. Look how he's dismissing it.
Harper's letter. Get your head out of your ass, man. Get your fucking head out of your ass. It's not just a little thing. What they're teaching kids is not just that. I've spoken to people from school boards. I've spoken to teachers. I've looked at the curriculums. They're not teaching.
I want you to do a poll of voters. Voters in the U.S. who are voting in the upcoming election. Ask how many of them know what white fragility is. Ask them about the ideas in white fragility. Ask them if they think all white people are racist, and see what the results are. Now,
does that change the fact that it's forming policy? Under Trump, it's forming policy.
It's a creeping Sharia thing. They've got the
Adan. It is real, Ali.
It's not creeping Sharia with like, oh, it's going to come in. It is in the government right now forming policy.
Ali, you need to be quiet. You need to be quiet for just one second, because I have been very good at listening to our patrons and improving and trying to, like, I know I still need to have work. But I've been doing a lot better to let you actually finish your thoughts, right? I know I still make mistakes, but you don't let me. And I don't know if you're going to get the same messages from our patrons when I do it, because you haven't let me make one point.
I'm
going
to get a lot of opposition.
But here's the thing. This is a thing that I keep trying to say, and you have not let me finish this thought like 4 times right now. Okay.
Okay. Go.
The example that you're giving, the creeping Sharia one, does not apply here. Okay, because the people that were talking about creeping Sharia, they couldn't show us of Islam being taught to students as actual propaganda on how the students need to be like follow Islamic laws. We didn't have that in the United States or in Canada of imams and coming in and being able to actually spread their theology to children, right? We didn't have people. No, come on. It wasn't part of the curriculum. We didn't have government.
Curriculum.
Shut up. See, you can't. You just can't.
That was me. I said that.
You can't do this. You didn't have giant billion-dollar companies spending millions of dollars to bring in for training of their employees all over the United States to make sure that their employees are Sharia compliant, right? You don't have people making outright, homophobic remarks. Like, this was a red line, even for the many leftists. When Muslims were saying homophobic things, they were like, you cross the line now. Your Islam defense is not going to cut it here. And Muslims get in trouble for saying homophobic, transphobic, and sexist stuff. That's a line that they didn't accept. But that's not a line. People get to say anti-white things, and they keep their government position. They keep their employment. They keep their editorial position, and they keep being said, like, that for even for Muslims, when they cross that line, even the people who defend Muslims, even defend Islam, they drop them. They let them go. But there seems to be an immunity for this, the group of people that actually go and say completely anti-enlightenment, spread anti-enlightenment values. They seem to be enjoying a level of immunity that even Muslims don't enjoy. So your creeping Sharia example does not apply, because that was mostly a fake fear tactic. This is... like, this is really there. And you keep, every time Obey gives you one example, another, you keep laughing. Like, oh, people don't know. If you talk to these people over there, they don't know. Oh, if you get off Twitter. If you get off Twitter, Ali, look at the money that is being spent on this in corporate America. Look at the training. Look at the budgets that is being changed for all these equity offices. And go look at the agenda of these equity offices. Go look at the diversity training, not just in corporate America, but also in government-funded institutions. Taxpayer money is going towards spreading this ideology. Just because the people that you talk to have not heard about it, it doesn't mean that this is not a major problem.
No, it is spreading. But the thing is,
Vince in the live chat is saying, I literally had white fragility for my philosophy class and was instructed to view my disagreements as not understanding it. So in a philosophy class, like we have in a small example of 12 people who are patrons that are watching us,
You're doing what you're accusing me of doing. Now, the thing is, you know that I agree that in terms of college classes and the kind of shit that they teach and the way that they have problems, they have cancel culture and all that stuff. You know, we're all on the same page.
No, but it's widespread. That's not what I'm saying. Okay, you agree with me. But it's widespread.
I think that we have to fight back against it. I think there is a healthy pushback against it. I don't think it's going to become a big deal. But what happened with here in the, you know, you're talking about Sharia law, it's not a big thing. They have just legalized for people to do the prayer call here, like in Mississauga, where I live, right? They've said that you can do that. Then the Hindu people came in, can we do our hymns? They said, no, you can't. This is for Ramadan. You can do it. There's, you know, the teaching stuff in schools, separating the Islamic systems with everything else, the private faith schools, all of the stuff. People talked about it all the time. You talk to Tariq Fatah, you talk to some of these other people, they will tell you that it was the biggest issue. You talk to Robert Spencer, he'll tell you that is the biggest issue that's facing us today. And they actually think it's connected with this whole woke culture. But,
you know,
and Ali, what I'm saying is the budgets that you're talking about, my company has got like a diversity and inclusion person there. And actually what they're doing is it's not a bad job either. Like, they're just keeping it to the very mainstream stuff. Most people who are doing diversity and culture in companies and in these institutions and doing anti-racism theories are not going around and telling all white people that they're racist. They're not teaching them.
They're influential. It doesn't matter. First of all, Ali, Let me tell you why you're a hypocrite. Because a lot of the alt-right narratives that are out there and are a big deal, most people on the right do not agree with them. Yet you're one of the people that keeps going out there on Twitter and everywhere else and keep associating racism and bigotry and homophobia with just the Republican Party as a whole. Right. Even though most of these people, hold on. Yeah. Like, you keep saying, even though most of these people, if you, I agree with you that the far right narrative is a huge problem. It's a huge problem.
Yet most the left is a huge problem.
Yes, yes. Yet most right-leaning people, if I go ask them if they agree with alt-right narratives, they will tell me like outright no. Like, no, they do not agree. Most right-leaning people, most Republicans do not agree with the alt-right narrative. Yet you understand that even though they don't agree with that, and even though you sometimes exaggerate how many people on the right agree with that, but you agree that even if they didn't, the alt-right narrative is dangerous, it's spreading, and it's a big problem, why? Even though most right-leaning people don't agree with it.
Okay. Why do I say that? How okay. many? Okay, hold on. Why the reason I say that is that who is... who is the president right now and who are the people enabling him? Who are the, what are the governments in Europe right now? Right. How many Marxists and how many
exactly
how many so people exactly are
Ali, I'm not disagreeing with that. You're missing the point. I agree with you. No, I agree with you. Listen to me. I agree with you. So you prove to your point that you don't have to have many people agreeing with something for that idea to be influential. So I'm not competing with you.
Okay,
I'm
no, not but, saying no. Can I give you? Yep. Can I give you guys a very valid reason why I want to oppose this stuff more than the far right? Okay, and I talked to you about the education stuff, and it is teaching kids specifically what I said. Okay, it's teaching an ethic math framework. But you've been teaching this in high schools. You've had this in colleges. Okay. When white people, you are going to create a bunch of people, and you are going to create a system where kids are ready for extremists of any type. So when this stuff has a hyper focus on race and identity, and when you push that into kids, race and identity, okay, yes, you're going to have a white identity politics. It's bound to happen. You already had it. So some guy goes, burns a cross, and it's because he got pissed off at something. I blame it on the guy. Okay. I don't blame it on, I was indoctrinated, whatever. I don't fall for all that shit. But you are creating a system where you are going to have a large group. Like, okay, it won't be the majority, but it will be a large minority that is ripe for picking of extremists of any type. United States is 70% white, something like that. Mm-hmm. You don't want a large minority of that group to take on white supremacist ideas. You are pushing people to the white supremacists. Like I said, I am scared of the overcorrection from the right, from the left. I am terrified of what can come from the right. Look at Weimar Germany. Anti-fascist action, like the precursor to Antifa, they started the violence. They started getting violent again. They started creating sympathy for the Nazis, and then there was putting Nazis in prison, whatever. And it led to the rise of fascism. Trump can use this, these excuses to say, well, I'm going to go in authoritarian. These people are taking down, attacking Biden because Biden's attacking God. Okay. Seattle, you were talking about, police departments, whatever, a little area in Seattle. The city, like they have plans now to completely dismantle the police. I think they cut her salary by a third. The police chief, they want to completely dismantle it. Like, okay, people talk about Camden, but they don't mention what they did in Camden. Okay, it wasn't like, okay, we fired all the police. Yeah, they technically did, but the next day or right away, they hired like 85 to 95 of them percent of them back again. Right? They reformed the police, but they had a plan in place. These people don't look past tear down. Okay, all they have is tear down, and once you tear it down, something's going to rise from the ashes. I don't know if there's a plan in place. I don't think Seattle's had a chance from George Floyd to now to come up with a cohesive plan on how to reorganize the police, but they're just defunding it. Like I said, this
guys, we're gone over 2 hours, so closing remarks.
It's not a mainstream a thing that people are taking up. Defunding is being written about, and everybody talks about it a lot. And a lot of loud voices are saying it, but it's just not a mainstream thing. It's not even embraced by the Democratic Party platform. But anyway,
I'm not saying it's a mainstream thing, but it's happening in cities.
Yeah.
So this stuff, it's happening in individual cities.
Majorly in one city. right?
And you know, but all, it's also happening in Minneapolis. Oh, let's not forget that.
They're dismantling and they're building from the ground up, like the Camden example that you gave.
Okay.
It's a terrible name, defunding the police, but it's radical police reform, which is
Originally, it didn't mean that. Okay, let's be clear. Or the people who came up with that idea were not talking about reform.
But that's not the mainstream thing. Nobody's talking about defunding.
It's really interesting how the fact that the origins came from people that had so much authority that people couldn't come to that. Like, it's very interesting because the mainstream people, most people could understand why it was ridiculous to actually go and defund the police, right? But this is very interesting. But the wokey people are still powerful enough for people to have to spin their hashtag rather than dismissing it. Like, they haven't taken over, but they're influential enough for the mainstream media to be like, hey, let's not defund the police, let's reform the police. No, they still have to pay some respect, some acknowledgement of the authority that these people have to at least try to reinterpret what defund the police means. This is exactly what you do with Islam. Right, the authority of Islam is too high. You can't just get rid of the sacred text. You just have to look at the verses and be like, okay, this verse that is telling you that you need to beat your wife, let's try to read it because it has too much authority for us to completely dismiss it as ridiculous. This is the authority that the woke people have, and given that what's happening in the past 5 years, if the same trend continues, I'm scared of what's going to happen in the next 5 years. The
Democratic Party in the U.S. has specifically said we're not going to defund the police, but we want to.
You didn't even listen to what I said.
But here's the thing.
Just because I don't like echo it doesn't mean I didn't listen to it. I did listen to it.
Defund the police is a small part of it. Like I said, it's the whole enterprise of that.
I understand. Yeah,
it's to take down the Enlightenment, and but it's infecting a lot of departments and universities. It's coming out of the universities. It's infecting law. Look at the ACLU; they're useless now. They're fucking toothless shits. Okay. Thank God for fire. The Canadian, the Ontario Legal Department, it's basically like the bar, like the legal association. There's a woman named Lisa Bildy. She's a lawyer for the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedom in Canada. They're the people who defended the spa workers from Yanev, right? They do a lot of civil liberties. Yeah, yeah.
They do a lot of civil liberties.
She went to these, like, they were trying to bring in this exact diversity shit into the law, like the law commission or whatever it is. But like I said, I got the name wrong, but speak to her. Like, it's just, you don't need a lot of people there. No, there is not a lot of people, but these people have nothing else in their lives. So they've got time to go to PTA meetings and no one else shows up and this curriculum comes out. They like it. So they voted in.
I have to go see my food. Very healthy pushback
against all of this, and it's in place. And I don't think that it's going to become as dystopian.
No thanks to you, okay? No,
I've been pushing back on this for years.
Yeah, but you also make excuses for it. You also under.
We were the original anti-woke people. The ex-Muslim people were talking about this a very, very...
Only when it comes to Islam. The ex-Muslims have mainly been anti-woke when it comes to Islam, but not when it comes to... Obeid is the true anti-woke person because he's consistent on everything woke-related. Other ex-Muslims are making excuses for the woke.
You're our guest, and it was really good to see you. And by the way,
good talking to you guys.
This is fun.
Whatever, we got a little heated, but it was fun.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's only fun if it gets heated.
Okay.
Susanna is saying Obeido Akbar. I agree.
Yeah.
Greatest. Oh, Faraz is saying greatest podcast ever. Oh, thank you, Faraz.
I can take the credit for that this time.
Yes.
I will say one thing, like for people. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. And I did a review of Critical Cynical Theories. I got a review copy of it, so I got it before I got the hard copy.
Yeah.
And I said something in it, and I'm going to say it again now. We've been talking about a lot of stuff, and this stuff is insane. Okay. I urge everyone to get a copy of Cynical Theories. If you really want to know where this stuff comes from, what it's saying. So when you hear anti-racism, you can just ask a couple of questions, what they mean. And if it's coming to that crap, like, you know, the critical race theory, they actually even give you templates in the back of how to push back against it. Right. The book is awesome. Another thing, people, but
I've ordered it.
Like, okay. Read White. Like, this is shit. Like, this stuff has damaged my brain. And I shit you not. Like, I was like, you know, they're showing repeats of Jeopardy. I was watching one a couple of weeks ago. There was an Indian contestant and there was two white contestants. They asked a question about India. One of the white contestants got it right. And right away, the little fucking woke part of my brain went. And I was like, oh my God, how could Jeopardy do that? The white person should not have answered the question. Let the Indian person answer it. Plus Alex made a joke about the Indian person not getting the question right. How could Alex be so racist? It's like that. It just clicks in. You just start seeing problems fucking everywhere. And it focuses everything on race. So,
all right.
Read some of these books.
I'm just going to read some good comments about, Faraz is saying, Obeid, king of anti-wokeism. John is saying, that's about it. Some people are saying, awesome. That's about it. Okay.
Yeah.
Mars is going to send you some stuff. They're trying to change. Oh, Mars is saying, Obeid, I have some stuff to send you about the stuff they're trying to change to our school curriculums here in Silicon Valley. There was a Susanna comment. Susanna saying, thank you, Obeid. I really needed this. I'm glad you came out. And she also says, I literally had to reprogram myself these other ways of knowing. Susanna was deep into that community before. Anyways, Obeid, I love you, man. Thank you for being here.
Thanks a lot. It was fun.
Yeah, it was good. And hopefully, like, you know, once this whole thing's over, we're going to come up to Montreal again. And you can...
You should maybe hurry because it depends on COVID and everything. But I'm speaking with a company... Well, it's another government organization, but it's a First Nations one in Northern Ontario. It's halfway between Thunder Bay and Winnipeg, and if I get that, I'll probably move out there.
Oh shit!
Okay. I liked the town I was living in up north. The only thing I didn't like was I had to pay $2,500 to fly from there,
that's insane.
So like, this is a nice.
Right, guys, I have to go because people are hungry and they're waiting.
Yeah. Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, we're blabbing away.
All right, love you guys. Talk to you guys soon.
Speak to you guys later. Bye.
He's single, ladies. He's single.
The secular jihadists have been made possible thanks to the Illuminati and the covert support of Israel and the CIA. That's what we have been told, but we haven't received our checks yet. If you like what we do, please support us. Share the podcast with your friends. Write and tweet us with topic and guest suggestions. Or head over to secularjihadists.com and give a dollar or more for exclusive access to live video. Have your questions read and answered on the air and more. Till next time, may the flying spaghetti monster be with you.